ಜಯಂ ಶುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿಭ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿಕಿ ಜಯಂ ನಿತ್ಯಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿಭ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿಕಿ ಅನಂತಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶೀಲ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರಯಂ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರದೀಪ್ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಿಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಮಾಯಾಪುರ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಾಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸೀದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೋ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಿಂಗ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ನಮಾಮ ಶುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸಾದ ಭೂದಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾನಂದ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಣೆ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವದೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವದೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವದೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ಪಾರ್ಥಾಯ ಪ್ರತಿಬೋಧಿತಾಂ ಭಗವದಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣೇನ ಸ್ವಯಂ ವ್ಯಾಸೇನ ಗ್ರಥಿತಾಂ ಪುರಾಣ ಮುನಿನಾಂ ಮಧ್ಯೆ ಮಹಾಭಾರತಂ ಅದ್ವೈತಾಮೃತವರ್ಷಿಣಿ ಭಗವದಿ ಅಷ್ಟಾದಶಾಧ್ಯಾಯಿನಿ ಅಂಬ ತ್ವಾಮನಸಂಧದಾಮಿ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತೆ ಭವದ್ವೇಷಿಣಿ ನಮೋಸ್ತು ದೇ ವ್ಯಾಸ ವಿಶಾಲ ಬುದ್ಧಿ ಫುಲ್ಲಾರವಿಂದಾಯದ ಮತ್ರ ನೇತ್ರ ಏನ ತ್ವಯಾ ಭಾರತ ತೈಲಪೂರ್ಣ ಪ್ರಜ್ವಾಲಿತೋ ಜ್ಞಾನಮಯ ಪ್ರದೀಪ ಪ್ರಪನ್ನ ಪಾರಿಜಾತಾಯ ತ್ವತ್ರವೇತ್ರೈಕ ಬಾಣೈ ಜ್ಞಾನ ಮುದ್ರಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಗೀತಾಮೃತ ದುಹೇ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವೋಪನಿಷದೋ ಗಾವೋ ದುಗ್ಧ ಗೋಪಾಲ ನಂದನ ಪಾರ್ಥೋ ವತ್ಸ ಸುಧೀರ್ಭೋಕ್ತ ದುಗ್ಧಂ ಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ಮಹತ್ ವಸುದೇವ ಸುಧಂ ದೇವಂ ಕಂಸಚಾನೂರಮರ್ದನಂ ದೇವಗೀ ಪರಮಾನಂದಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ವಂದೇ ಜಗದ್ಗುರುಂ ಭೀಷ್ಮದ್ರೋಣತಡಾಜಯದ್ರಜಲಾಕಾಂಧಾರ ನೀಲೋಲ್ಪಲ ಶಲ್ಯಗ್ರಾಹವದಿ ಕೃಪೇಣ ವಹನಿ ಕರ್ಣೇನ ವೇಲಾಕುಲ ಅಶ್ವತ್ಥಾಮಾ ವಿಕರ್ಣ ಘೋರಮಕರ ದುರ್ಯೋಧನಾವರ್ತಿನಿ ಸೋತ್ತೀರ್ಣ ಖಲು ಪಾಂಡವೈರಣ ನದೀ ಕೈವರ್ತಕ ಕೇಶವ ಪಾರಾಶರ್ಯವಜ ಸರೋಜಮಲಂ ಗೀತಾರ್ಥಗಂಧೋಲ್ಕಟಂ ನಾನಾಖ್ಯಾನಗೇಸರಂ ಹರಿಕಥಾ ಸಂಬೋಧನಾಭೋದಿದಂ ಲೋಕೈ ಸಜ್ಜನ ಶಲ್ಪದೈರಹರಃ ಪೇಬೀಯಮಾನಂ ಮುದಾ ಭೂಯಾತ್ ಭಾರತ ಪಂಕಜ ಕಲಿಮಲ ಪ್ರಧ್ವಂಸಿನ ಶ್ರೇಯಸೇ ಮೂಗಂ ಕರೋದಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಕುಂ ಲಂಘಯದೇ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯಲ್ಕೃಪಾತಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಮಾಧವಂ ಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವರುಣೇಂದ್ರ ರುದ್ರಮರುದ ಸನ್ವಂದಿ ದಿವ್ಯೈ ಸವೈ ವೇದೈ ಸಾಂಗಪದೈ ಕ್ರಮ ಉಪನಿಷದೈರ್ಗಾಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಸಾಮಗಾಃ ಧ್ಯಾನಾವಸ್ಥಿತ ತದ್ಗದೇನ ಮನಸಾ ಪಶ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಯೋಗಿನೋ ಯಸ್ಯಾಂದಂ ನ ವಿದುಸುರಾಸುರಗಣೈ ದೇವಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಗೋವಿಂದ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ This 13th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita is connected to the 7th chapter quite a bit. In the last chapter, in the 12th chapter, Krishna spoke about the who is a devotee, he said. And he listed a number of qualifications for a devotee. He mentioned there, Santushta Satatam Yogi. ಯದಾತ್ಮ ದೃಢ ನಿಶ್ಚಯ ಮೈ ಅರ್ಪಿತ ಮನೋಬುದ್ಧಿ ಯೋಮಲ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಮರ್ಪಯ ಅಂಡ್ ಇಫ್ ಯು ಲುಕ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಇನ್ ಟು ದ 7th ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ 8th ವರ್ಸ್ seventh chapter, in the eighth verse, again, Krishna mentions there that the eighth chapter, seventh verse, Tasmal sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyacha mai arpita mano mudra mam aveshasi asamshaya. That is the seventh verse in the eighth chapter. Krishna is saying the same thing, mai arpita mano buddhi. You see there? In this chapter, in this also, when he talks about a devotee, he says, this mai arpita mano buddhi, that's the important thing. He's stressing that point. Krishna has said that in the 8th chapter, in the 7th verse, Tasmal sarveshu kaleshu ma manusmara yudhyacha mayarpita manobuddhi ma maveshasi asamshaya. He said. So that mayarpita manobuddhi, Krishna brought back again in the 12th chapter, in the chapter 12, again in this 14th verse. Sandushta sadadam yogi yadalpa drada nishaya mayarpita manobuddhi Yomal Bhakta Same Priya. So obviously Krishna gives importance to that Mayarpita Manobuddhi. That is why he has repeated that, right? And then when you go further, in that same verse, 14th verse of the 12th chapter, Ajari Swami says there that the Priyohi Yaninotyartam Aham Sacha Mam Priya. And he is referring to the 17th verse in the 7th chapter. You see? If you look into the 7th chapter and verse 17, Tesham yani nityayukta eka bhaktir vishishyate priyohi yanino tyartham aham sacha mama priya. And Ajari Swamiji is saying here on that, he says, priyohi yanino tyartham aham sacha mama priya. Idi saptamo adhyaye sujitram tal iha prabanchade. To mention again that a jnani is very dear to Krishna. His bhakti is what he is talking about here. Jnani's bhakti, which is different from the bhakti what normally people are used to, accustomed to. Yeah? So there in that 7th chapter he mentioned tesham jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktir vishishyade priyohi jnaninotyartam aham sacha mama priya. The same thing, he is bringing it back again here. Sandushta sadadam yogi adalma dhrada nishaya mayarpita manobuddhir yomal bhakta samaya priya. Ajari Swamiji is saying here that priyohi jnaninotyartam aham sacha mama priya idi saptamo adhyaye suchitram tad iha prabanchade. He says that is what is referring to here, the bhakti of a jnani. Then many things there. Then at the end, he concluded there, saying that, yedo dharmyamrutamidam. That was the last verse. Yathoktam pariyupasade shraddhadana malparama bhaktase adivame priya. So that verse, what Krishna mentioned in the 7th chapter, that is 17th verse. Tesham yani nitya yukta eva bhaktir vishishyate priyohi jnanino tyartam aham sacha mama priya idi yat sujitam tad vyakhyayam iha upasamhradam bhakta te adiva me priya idi. Ajari Swami says there that expansion of that verse, tesham yani nitya yukta eva bhaktir vishishyate priyohi jnanino tyartam aham sacha mama priya, that verse expansion is all these 8 verses. He's saying that. He says that. Yeah? So, in order that Jnani's bhakti, Krishna calls as the proper bhakti. And that Jnani's bhakti is with all these qualifications, what he has spoken here. Yasma dharmamrutam idam yathoktam anirishtan bhagavato vishnu parameshwarasya adivame priyo bhavati tasmad idam dharmamrutam mukshuna yatnada anushtayam vishnu priyam param dhama Jigamushna iti vyakhyartha. So, after one who follows these instructions and one who practices bhakti, he will get liberated and he goes back to Krishna. And in this way, Bhakti Yogam chapter finishes there. Then 13th chapter is an important chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. All chapters are important. But when you say something important means that for certain reasons it is important. So generally we say Bhagavad Gita has got 700 verses. But there is one verse in this chapter which makes it 701. Some Bhagavad Gitas, if you look, you will find 700. But actually there is one more verse, which is this first verse in the 13th chapter, and sometimes which you don't find in the some Bhagavad Gitas, right? So, Ajari Swami has not taken that verse into his commentary. Arjuna Vacha, Prakritim Purusham Jaiva, Kshetram Kshetrajnam Evacha, Edat Beditum Ichyami Jnanam Chayam Chakeshava. Arjuna says to Krishna, Prakriti Purusha Kshetram Kshetrajnam, Jnanam Nyayam. I would like to know everything, all these terminologies, what they mean, right? So, important things to understand here. This chapter does require a long introduction to get into this properly. Normally, Salsangam is with the idea of having Shreyas for a Jiva, for the Shreyas of a Jiva. What does Salsangam mean? Salsangam means Sangam with Krishna, or experience of Krishna, or some understanding of anubhuti, of Atma, of the soul, which means that basically what it is saying is that Atma exists, right? Atma exists, soul exists in everyone. But we don't have the experience of it. But it exists, and to get an experience of the presence of the soul is salsangam, to experience the existence of the soul within us. Like you can see, the modern science does not accept the soul. They don't have any concept of the soul. But Shastram does not agree with that. Shastram is concerned only soul exists, nothing else exists. So they're so different, 180 poles degrees apart, both understanding, right? So, Sangam with the Sat. Sat is the soul. Sangam with the Sat is Salsangam. Right? So what actually exists, is only the soul. Is only the soul. And experiencing that is Salsangam, presence of the soul. Right? So, all the Bhagavad Gita basically has only one thing to talk about, the soul. That's the main topic of discussion in the Bhagavad Gita, right? So Arjuna and Krishna, they are talking about the soul. That's the Salsangam there, right? Once that experience comes of the presence of the soul, then Arjuna and Krishna is not the important thing. It's the soul that matters, presence of the soul, right? There's no speaker, no listener, right? But the existence of that soul, which is the Sattva, and which is addressed sometimes as Ishvara, sometimes as Brahman, and Bhagavan, like said in the Bhagavatam, Brahmedi Paramatmedi Bhagavanidi Shabdyade, right? So, you can call that as the Atma. Atma is that, the soul is that, right? So, anything, when you experience something, it is called anubhuti, isn't it? Anubhuti it is. That's a word for that. That means you are experiencing it inside. Yeah. And if there is any anubhuti in a person, you can take it that there is salsangam there. So, the major principle is that even if you don't get salsangam, at least you should avoid dussangam. That's a major principle. So you may not get salsangam always, but dussangam, under all circumstances one should stay away from dusangam, right? So you remember in the Srimad Bhagavatam, our Muchukunda was sleeping in the cave, right? And Krishna woke him up and gave him darshanam to Muchukunda, right? In the 10th canto, you will see that story, right? In the 51st chapter. And there, Muchukunda, he was sleeping in the cave, right? And he got this darshanam. And Muchukunda says, if you look, it's Muchukunda Stuti. Famous Stuti it is in the Bhagavatam. If you look at it is in the 51st chapter, and if you look at the 54th verse, what Muchukunda had to say, Bhabhava vargoya brahmato yada bhave, janasya tarhachura sal samagamam, sal sangamo yarhi tadaiva salgado, paravare shetoi jayate mati. There's a verse there, like that. He says, Bhabhava vargo janato brahmato yada bhave, janasya tarhachura sal samagamam. Right? So, what he is saying basically is, human society who is busy with eating, sleeping, and taking birth, dying, all these things, one is going through this life one after the other. Right? But unfortunately, he is not able to find what is reality here. He does not know what the truth is. Right? So, he does not get time in his life to give attention to what really exists in this world, which is the soul. So, instead of giving attention to that soul, he gets busy with so many other things in this world, gets busy with the body, maintaining the body, eating, sleeping, then he dies, then he takes birth again. In this way, life after life, he goes on in this way. And to exist like in this way, to exist in this world, is called samsara, material existence. Material existence means living in this world, totally identifying with the body, taking care of the body, and eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and then dying, and then coming back with another birth with another body. This cycle continuing, this is called samsara, material existence, right? So, what is happening now? What actually there exists in him, he has no connection with it. He is busy with the body, body takes birth, then eating, sleeping, mating, defending goes on, and finally body leaves and goes away. From Krishna's point of view, Krishna has not given body any importance. Krishna has not given any importance. You can see how Krishna puts that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Sharira yatra pichate. Body is just a vehicle you are traveling through, he says. That's how Krishna says about this body. You see, Sharira yatra pichate, he says. So, Sharira yatra, it's a journey through the body, he's saying. That means, the real me is I'm passing through this body. That's the way Krishna is looking at it. He has not given, whereas we look at us how we are totally absorbed in the body, thinking that body is the reality, I have to take care of the body. So that is the avidya what Krishna is talking about. Krishna's point is this, that, right? What is in really experiencing inside, sata, that you have no time for that. But you are busy with something which is so temporary and which was born at a particular time and then it went through so many changes. And then it left the world and you have gone from there. So, sharira yatra vichare, that the word Krishna is using, sharira yatra. Yatra means a journey. It's a journey through the body, he says. You are traveling through the body, through one body after another body after another body. So, that's the way he looks at it, right? So, there are two things. One, what is in your experience level, and another one which you are perceiving through senses. Two things. One, what you are experiencing inside, and another one, what you are perceiving in the world. Right? So, and normally what we do is, we will mix up these two things together, and we talk about it. What we perceive things, and what we experience in this world. Right? So, and normally, normal people, what they do, whatever they perceive through senses, they say it is the truth. Totally opposite to what Shastram says. What we see through the eyes, we think that it is the truth. What we are experiencing about the soul, which we say we don't know about it. Just see how that avidya working within, right? So, what is happening is that we are experiencing our existence, awareness, bodham in us. We don't see it, but we are experiencing it. We ignore that, and then what we see through the eyes, we take that is real. This is the avidya. Avidya is that. That just imagine that I'm seeing things through senses, and I'm saying that this is all real. And what I'm experiencing inside, my own existence, awareness, bodham, consciousness inside, I'm ignoring that. I'm saying I've not seen consciousness. And I'm ignoring that, although I'm experiencing it. Presence of the soul is felt all the time, is it not? I mean, you don't require much proof. You're breathing continuously day and night, blood is circulating, the digestion is taking place. I have no control over it, I am not even aware of it, what's going on, but it is happening. And Krishna has spoken so many times that without his presence inside us, the system doesn't work, and none of these things will happen. So there is all this proof, but I can't see any of them myself. And I'm ignoring that. Instead, I'm thinking, seeing everything with my eyes, and I'm saying this is all real, what I'm seeing through my eyes. Just see the avidya inside. How far the avidya has gone inside, right? So, what you are experiencing, you are saying, I'm not seeing that. What I'm seeing through the senses, I'm seeing through my eyes, I'm saying it's real. Right? And some people say about the soul, they say that, I believe that it exists, but I believe that, they say, right? So, they are seeing something, they are experiencing something, right? And what you are experiencing inside, you are not seeing. And what you are seeing, you are not experiencing. This is very clear. This is important to know this, because you see how much our method of studying and the way we have the knowledge, what we have about this world, how much ignorance is in that. Yeah. What you are seeing in the world, you are accepting it as real. What you are experiencing inside, you are not accepting it as a reality. You're saying, I believe in that. Whether you believe it or not, there is ample proof that Antaryami is inside, Krishna is inside, and because of that, so many bodies functioning, senses are working, subtle bodies working, mind is working, intelligence is working. What more proof do you want for the existence of the soul? Is it not? So, these two things, what you see with your eyes is never your experience, and what you see with your eyes is called pratiti, that's a word for that, pratiti, or perception, what you say in English, right? And what you experience inside, that is called sat, right? And the nature of sat is always anubhavam. Anubhava means experiencing, right? That is the nature of sat. And pratiti, its nature is always perception. What you see through your eyes is pratiti. Pratiti's nature is always perception. You perceive that it exists, right? And anubhuti, or what you are experiencing inside, is not subjected to senses, not indriya vedyam, right? And experience is not sensory. It's not sensory, right? And anubhuti, you cannot know through senses. These are important things to know when you study Bhagavad Gita, because otherwise Bhagavad Gita you won't understand properly. When Acharya Swami says Dhruvijnayartha means, you need a good background before you study Bhagavad Gita about all these things, right? The way rishis look at things, that their way of analyzing things, is not like the science does it. They are coming from a different angle, the whole thing. So therefore this introduction becomes essential, because in this chapter that's what is going to discuss now. Krishna is going to talk about that. Anubhavam, pratiti, two different things. Pratiti is perception, anubhavam is experience. What you are experiencing all the time is real. What you are perceiving through the senses is not real. And this is not getting into our head. Why? Because we whole life accepted whatever we perceive through the senses as real and what we experience inside as unreal. And that avidya is very strong in everybody. That avidya is very strong inside. And therefore, when the rishis are saying to us that the world is not real, we are not able to accept it because of this problem. Yeah. That is why it's important to know what you perceive through senses and what you experience inside are two different things. Anubhuti or experience inside is not possible through senses. It doesn't come through senses at all. That's the most important thing. Anubhuti, experience inside, never comes through senses. Right? And with senses, you will never be able to experience anubhuti inside, right? It means with the mind you cannot know that. The mind you cannot know that. And neither with the senses nor with the mind, and whatever you are experiencing, that is never called anubhuti. That is never called anubhuti, right? So, just like, now I am seeing few people sitting here, right? I can only say I am seeing you, but I don't have your experience. I am seeing you, right? Similarly, say Shiva comes here or Vishnu comes here. I see the form, but I cannot experience them inside, Shiva or Vishnu. I will see them with my eyes, that's all it is, right? In order to see someone, I need the eyes, and my experience or my reality of me for all everybody else is dependent on my eyes, is it not? Through the senses. It is through the eye that I am going to make a connection with others, through my eye only, right? So, suppose I don't have the eyes, I don't know whether you are existing or not. That means my whole connection with everything else is through the eye only, right? So, suppose it is not the eye, I can feel it by touching somebody in that way, alright? So that is in Upanishads, that is how it will say. Everything they will say, seeing through the eye, touching is also considered to be experienced through the eye. And that means through the skin seeing something, seeing through the senses, it is considered to be seeing through the senses. Suppose you touch something and feel it, it is called seeing through the senses. Similarly, seeing through the nose is what you are smelling. It's called seeing through the nose. And similarly, tasting through the tongue is called seeing through the tongue. Seeing through the tongue. So in this way, all the Upanishads will say that all these five things are called eyes in one sense, because they are senses. But because eye is a very important sense, so therefore all other senses are also sometimes used as eyes, spoken as eyes, right? So if I have to experience others, I have to see through the eyes, or I have to touch somebody, and or I have to hear your sound. And in this way, through senses only, I can relate with others, right? And but where is the difference then? Suppose I don't have any senses operating in me, still I experience inside something, and that's called anubhuti, without the help of senses, whatever you are experiencing inside. So, for example, my existence, I don't need senses to know about my own existence. I exist, and that experience I have, without any of my senses, I know I exist, right? That is anubhuti, right? So, so the Indriya Jnanam means what you perceive through the senses, right? That like these five senses, eyes, ears, nose, touch and taste, all these things, right? And all these things, they are not considered to be salsangam. What you perceive through senses is not considered to be salsangam, right? So, I'm saying something, and you hearing me, you are seeing me, that is not salsangam. That's not salsangam, right? Similarly, if you see a flower, and if you smell, it doesn't become salsangam. Or if you take some prasadam, it doesn't become salsangam, right? So, similarly, if you see a great personality, if you touch his feet and put it on your head, it doesn't become salsangam. To understand salsangam properly, right? All these are experiences through indriyam, because they are all experiences through senses, right? So, dependent on the senses, but at the same time, actual salsangam is something that which never leaves us, that experience, what I get from that, right? And I don't need any help of the senses for that, for trying to understand this, right? Real salsangam, sat is atma, sangam is connection with atma. When you experience atma inside, there is no involvement of any senses in that. No involvement of senses, right? So, you have to get to know that, what that means. Without the presence of senses, you are experiencing something inside. So, anubhuti it is called, right? And normally, our existence is like that, is it not? Our existence doesn't require any proof. I am experiencing it all the time, that I exist. That feeling inside us is not dependent on anything else. It is different than what you get through the senses. And that we exist, that is what refers to us Bhagavan or Ishvara, right? Ishvara's existence in us is that existence called aham, aham anubhuti, right? Why is it said like that is, Ishvara, or we call by different names, Krishna, Bhagavan, Paramatma, whatever name you call it, it is not something that has to come from outside. It's already inside us. We have already got it. It doesn't have to come from outside. So, if we start thinking, normally people think like this, that I'm doing sadhana today, so one day I will get to see Krishna, they say. Do they not? People say like that. I'm doing this sadhana today, and I'll do for a long time till I get to see Krishna. Really. That's a very ignorant statement. Krishna, you've already got it. You don't have to get it. He is not going to come one day in front of you and say, I've come in front of you now. So that very statement is against the Shastra. When people say like that, I'm doing practicing spiritual life so that one day I'll get to see Krishna. That statement is against Shastram. Shastram is saying, you already have Krishna inside you, you have not recognized him. That's the problem. That's the problem, right? So, that is what you're saying. Self-realization is something that is going to happen sometime in the future, not now. And as though it is going to happen sometime, somewhere in the future, in some other point in time, right? And hoping that inside your mind, you are thinking about it, it is going to happen one day, self-realization will happen. You can keep on thinking like that, it is never going to happen. It's never going to happen. That's the way life is, right? So, because what has to happen has already happened. And that is why in this Bhagavad Gita Bhashyam, Acharya Swamiji is saying there, Brahmam is Bhuta Vastu Vishayam, he says. Bhuta Vastu Vishayam means that it's already resolved, the problem. You already have it with you. It's not something going to happen sometime in the future, somewhere. That's not how it is, spiritual life is. So much misunderstanding about these things. Brahmam, Bhuta Vastu Vishayam. Bhuta Vastu Vishayam means something you already have it. It's not something that has to come later. Already you have it. Only thing is, you have not recognized it. That is the problem. The Antaryami present inside is saying that, right? So, it is already Siddham. In Bhagavadam, they will use the word Ubalabdham. Ubalabdham means you have already got it. Ubalabdhi Matram. It says in the Pipalayana Maharshi's verses, right? So, it is Ubalabdham, and it is that Brahmam that is being discussed in this chapter, right? And it is that Brahmam who is present in everyone is listening when we are talking. It is he who is present in everyone is listening. It is because of his presence only that you are able to listen, right? So, and he is the one who is present inside everyone, giving the strength for the ear to hear others when they talk, right? So, so when we are talking now about him, about Antaryami in this way, right? Instead of hearing about him, if you start giving attention to who is hearing this from inside, right? One who is hearing this from inside, because if Antaryami inside you is hearing actually through the ear, it's Antaryami who is hearing it, right, through the ear. But our attention is on what we are hearing. But what Shastram says is that instead of giving attention to what you are hearing, if you start thinking, who is actually hearing this from inside? Who is giving that, right? And then it says that you will experience what Atma is then. Atma is, right? So, rather than what you are hearing and registering that, right, and trying to understand what is being spoken, more important than that is that who is the person who is hearing from inside me to what is being spoken. That's more important, right? And that is called Antaryami. That's Antaryami. So Antaryami, how do you recognize? This is the only way you can recognize. When you, because that is why Shravanam is given so much importance. This sound thing is the one that comes from the soul. And when you are experiencing the sound through your ears, even though you give importance to what you are hearing, more important than that is who is hearing it. Where is the, like from where the sound has come, in the way, in the same way, who is the one who is hearing the sound? That is the most important part. Like, I'm speaking, and where is the sound coming from? Antaryami. Antaryami comes out in the form of Vachikam, that Vaikari sound, it comes out, but origin is from him. In the form of Vaikari it comes out, right? And when it comes from Vaikari, you are hearing it through your ears. And when you are hearing it through ears, you are giving importance to what I have spoken and trying to understand what means, what it means. Just like the way the sound has come from the soul, the power of your ears to listen to something is coming from your Antaryami. It comes from your Antaryami, right? So, that is how you gradually recognize the presence of Antaryami inside. That's the only way you can recognize it, right? So, if you gradually recognize the effect of Antaryami in everything what you are perceiving through the different senses, and you start realizing this perception I am getting is only because of the Antaryami inside, it will become self-realization at the end. But the only thing is that process has to go on for a long time, right? So, and in the normal period of time, if you have developed that habit of recognizing the presence of Antaryami inside, of continuously hearing and all the time thinking about Him, of His presence inside, then it can become Satsangam. It can become Satsangam, right? So that is what they are referring to here. And when you get that connection with the Antaryami, in the Krishna inside as Antaryami, how that will happen, you cannot know that through any senses. Only thing you can do is to experience it. That's all, right? And so when we get that experience inside of the presence of Antaryami inside, that is called the Kripa or grace of Krishna. Krishna's grace it is. Krishna making us aware, giving us an opportunity to become aware of Krishna's presence inside as Antaryami, and that is called grace or Kripa. In Shastram, that is what is called Kripa or grace, right? So, everything, normally what we try to understand through the mind, is it not? That's a normal nature. We hear something, I evaluate through my mind, and then I ask everybody else that this is how I have understood. So that means you are still on the platform of the mind. You are not moved away from there. And then mind will create some doubts inside. And then you will ask questions. This is a normal way people deal in this world. That is not spiritual. That's not spiritual. You hearing something and you accepting it through your mind and intelligence, you evaluating that, and then you are asking questions based on what doubts has come inside. That's not spiritual. That's not spiritual. These are very subtle things in the Bhagavad Gita to make it understand more, right? So, if you are able to keep the mind away, that's what they say. If you keep the mind away and you listen to things, and where does it go then? If it, instead of going to the mind, it goes to some other point, and that's Antaryami. When mind gives way, then Antaryami's presence will be experienced inside. So, and if you are able to do that, because we got used to with the mind so much in life, it's very difficult sometimes to change that habit of listening through the mind, right? But if you are able to do that, very easily it will come in the experience level, anubhavam level, anubhuti level, it can happen that way. So, sometimes you can see people listen and then they make notes and then they say, I will think about, read it at home when I go back and experience and find out what it means. All that is still in the platform of the mind. It has not moved to spiritual platform yet. It's still in the platform of the mind, right? So if you think that I have taken notes, what has been spoken, I didn't understand, again this is a mistake, misunderstanding. I'll go home and read it, think about it, and then I'll try to understand, that's misunderstanding. That is not spiritual. Spirituality means that freedom from the mind. Mind not interfering with what Krishna has spoken here, right? So, so here, that is why, you know, some Upanishad verses, we probably don't understand it properly. We are used to this method, that is the problem, right? This is why in Ishopanishad, that famous verse, Purnam Adam, Purnam Idam, Purnal Purnam Udachyade, Purnasyam, Purnam Adaya, Purnam Eva Avashishyade, right? What does that mean, actually? What that means is that Antaryami is Purnam it is. Yeah? It doesn't require mind and intelligence. It is Purnam. Purnam means perfect. It's complete in itself. We, when we deal with through the body, you need senses, mind, intelligence and everything. But Antaryami inside doesn't require any of these tools, like mind, intelligence and everything, right? So, That vastu, Antaryami, is Purnam. Purnam means perfect, complete in itself, right? And if you say that Antaryami requires some other things to know what it wants to know, that means that you are thinking Antaryami is also like your mind. Mind is incomplete, imperfect it is, whereas Antaryami is perfect, right? And what is actually existing is this Antaryami, which is Purnam, perfect in itself, right? Just like Antaryami in one person who is speaking is perfect, the Antaryami in the receiver also, one who is listening, is also perfect. So, therefore, all spiritual knowledge, spiritual realization is a transmission from Antaryami to Antaryami, not through mind, from mind to mind. This is why they say, when you hear Shastram, you have to keep the mind away from it, not allow the mind to interfere. Mind is not considered to be a trustworthy thing. Mind is not trustworthy. Mind will interpret things. Sankalpam, Vikalpam will come from the mind. Whereas message in the Shastram, from the Antaryami spoken, and Antaryami receives it, it doesn't have a problem. But that is proper Shravanam. When you hear from Antaryami to Antaryami, that is proper Shravanam. Right? So, but that is called Purnada. Purnada means this perfection in the Antaryami. Antaryami is perfect in everybody. Antaryami is perfect. Right? So, why did this situation happen to us, now the way we are like, right? There is a reason behind that, right? Even though there is perfection in all of us, Purnada is there in the Antaryami, something has come and put a cover on that, perfection, right? And we started giving importance to that, certain thoughts that has come, basically it's a mind. Basically, it's a mind, right? So, once the mind has come in our identification, it's called identification, body and the mind, right? When you identify with the body, identify with the mind, this perfection inside us as Antaryami, you are not able to give any attention to it. You are completely disconnected with the Antaryami inside. Disconnection has happened, right? So, in strictly speaking, this perfection is already there in us. Everybody is perfect within the Antaryami, right? So, he is the Sadvastu, what Krishna talks about, right? Sachidananda. And that is what Upanishads are saying, Prajnanam Brahmam. That Prajnanam inside, Antaryami inside is Brahmam, right? Vedam says like that, right? So, Satta, so many different words for that, Satta. Then Prajnanam. Atma, Bodham, Chaitanyam, everything refers to that Antaryami. These are all different words used in the Shastram to refer to Antaryami, right? Whatever you may say, doesn't matter. And it is that Antaryami you are calling as Shiva, Vishnu, Krishna, Rama, whichever, Sri Parvati, whatever it is that Antaryami, what you are referring to, right? So, and he is already available to us, present within us, Siddhandi, right? But we have not attention, we have never given attention to Antaryami, nor we understood what Antaryami is. Instead, what the mind has been dictating to us throughout life, we followed the mind and we are caught up in this situation where we are now, right? So, when you start giving attention to Antaryami, then but because you have given attention to all the other things, which are the different instruments, what comes with the body, which has come from Prakriti, Manasa, Buddhi, Ahangaram, Chittam, all these things, right? Because you didn't give attention to Antaryami, instead you gave attention to all the other things, what we got was Asat Sangam. Instead of Sal Sangam, we got Asat Sangam, because they are all Asat. Which one? Subtle body, senses, and the world. Everything is asat, and that asal sangam, we got it. So as I said before, sal sangam and asat sangam, dusangam, sal sangam and asat sangam. Sal sangam means only connection with the Antaryami, right? So in order to become free from this asat sangam, which means with the body, mind, senses and all that, we require satsangam, right? Now and then when we discuss Bhagavad Gita, time and again we will be reminded of the sat rather than the asat. It will be spoken, right? And when it is spoken, sometimes you may experience the presence of the sat inside, and that experience of the sat inside is called, another word is in Shastram, is pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means instantaneous recognition of the Antaryami's presence inside. That's called pratyabhijna. Right? So, you may find all these words a little bit difficult, but this pratyabhijna is an important word, very, very important word in Shastram, pratyabhijna. Right? Pratyabhijna means that when it refers to, you will see this mentioned in many places. It comes in the Bhagavatam several times, and even in the Shramurti Stotram also it is spoken about this pratyabhijna. Right? Pratyabhijna is an important statement there. Pratyabhijna means not the way you get knowledge step by step through the mind and intelligence. That's how you acquire knowledge normally in the world, is not? Step by step, you study something using your mind and intelligence, and you get to know something, and you are acquiring knowledge that way. That is not pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means when you hear, instantaneously you experience it inside. That is pratyabhijna. And Atma, Antaryami, is experienced that way. You don't, Antaryami, you don't experience it step by step. When you hear about Antaryami, if the Shravanam process is perfect, you should get it on the spot, straight away. You should get it, right? So, and that is why there are so many examples for that, to explain these things to us. Because people generally, we are used to a particular way of living in this world, and particular way of doing things. And that does not always work in a spiritual life. Spiritual life won't work like the way we think about other things in this world. We are used to a certain method, isn't it? Like, we use some technique, or that what they call these days a strategy, they say. You need a strategy. Spiritual life, strategy won't work. Even some people, even so many leaders, they are thinking that their strategy, they have a strategy in spiritual life. Spiritual life, what strategy can you have? No strategy will work. Technique, strategy, planning, all these things don't work in spiritual life. We have to come to terms with that first, right? So, so this pratyabhijna is that right word for that. Why? Because pratyabhijna is not something that you use your mind intelligence, scrutinize it, evaluate it, and then get to know what Antaryami is. No. Antaryami, when he reveals himself to you, it is instantaneous, and you get it. And then you don't require any more further studies about that, right? So, they give this example, right? Sometimes you have a chain in the neck, right? And he's thinking, or the one who was wearing that, she is saying that, I can't find my chain. It's already hanging on her neck. But she is looking for it elsewhere, right? So, and somebody else comes and points out to her, look, it's on your neck, what are you looking for? And then, so how long does it take? Just a few seconds, isn't it? As soon as somebody pointed out to her that the chain you are looking for is on your neck, immediately she realized it, it's there, right? So, in that way, when you see things, that's called the pratyabhijna. You understand pratyabhijna word? Pratyabhijna means that it's not something you have to do anything. For some reason, you are not conscious that it is there, the chain was there in the neck, right? You didn't notice it. And something in your mind created a problem, thinking that, oh, I have to get my chain, where is it? I'm looking for it everywhere. It's already there on your neck, you are not conscious of that, right? But then somebody asks you, what are you looking for? He said, I'm looking for my chain. Then he says to her, that look, the chain, you have got it on your neck, what are you looking for? And suddenly you realize that it was there already. That's called pratyabhijna. Similarly, Antaryami inside,
reveal to us that I am here, and you experience it straight away. Not other method like studying and evaluating and scrutinizing it and then trying to understand it. No, that is not pratyavijna. Pratyavijna means instantaneous experience of it as soon as you are told, right? And that is why this Antaryami presence inside, he always existing, right? Already we have it, right? And he is what we call as drukka. He is the drukka of everything, right? He is inside us and his experience is in the form that I am experiencing it every moment, right? And when you say like that, it is understood that giving attention, only what was missing was we didn't give attention to it. That is the problem. We never gave attention to that, right? And that chit shakti inside, which is called chit shakti, Antaryami, when your attention falls on that, that's called pratyavijna. That's called pratyavijna. I'll say this again to understand the difference, right? That sometimes we are hearing so much from Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, right? And still we are trying to understand Krishna in a method what we are used to, through the mind and intelligence. That's the process what we all do. That's not spiritual. That's the first thing. That's not spiritual. Spiritual experience is this, that when Krishna from inside a Antaryami takes the mind away from us and gives us direct perception of his existence inside, which is called pratyabhijna, right? And that pratyabhijna, direct experience, is the result of satsangam. Satsangam is supposed to create that experience of pratyabhijna, right? So, normally when we say like this, everybody will say, oh, I never experienced it any time. Because all through our life, this is all what we have done. We have used our mind intelligence and try to understand what Bhagavad Gita is saying, what Bhagavatam is saying, right? So, the reason for that is, our Shravanam was not perfect. The process of Shravanam was not perfect. And the reason why Shravanam was not perfect, right? What was the obstacle for that? Chittavritti. Our Chittavritti inside, right? So, if you understand this principle, this is all Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita. In a different language he has spoken these things, right? Shravanam becomes perfect if there is no Chittavritti inside. Most of the people, almost all, Shravanam carries on, Chittavritti also is there. And when Chittavritti is there, Pratyabhijna won't happen. Actually, there is no substitute word for all this in English, to be honest. Pratyabhijna, there is no substitute word for that. Pratyabhijna is Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means instantaneous experience of the Antaryami inside, right? So, in Krishna's words, one who has Krishna's instruction is like that, right? Although we are not following it completely. One who is talking about from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, if it has to be experienced by someone, that person should be free from envy. Free from envy. You remember in the 9th chapter, when Krishna spoke that chapter, he began with that statement. The first verse itself. Idam tu me guhyatamam, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, 9th chapter. Idam tu me guhyatamam, pravakshyami anasuyave, jnanam vijnana sahidam, yal jnaktva mokshase ashubhal, he says. What is asuya? Asuya means envy. Is it not? So, he is saying here that asuya, why is Krishna saying asuya or envy about somebody, right? So, This knowledge is free from envy. Envy means what he is talking about. When Krishna says envy, we will take it in the wrong way. You see, this is the problem in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna will say so many things like this, and we will understand so many things in the wrong way about it, right? So he is talking about envy means it is not envy against a person. It's not envy against a person. So sometimes you may feel envy towards knowledge. Towards knowledge you feel envy. So, and therefore I'm not able to understand, so I'm not accepting that. People will say like this. And that is envy. Some knowledge in the Shastram, people will hear that, they are not able to accept it. And because they are not able to understand it. And not able to understand things and not able to accept things like that is called envy. In the Shastram language, it's purely because of our lower modes of nature in us. And we are not able to rise up to the level of purity, what is required to understand what Krishna is saying. That's what that verse is all about. Idandume gukhyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave. He's saying. So when he said that to Arjuna, we start thinking, what is Arjuna envy about? Envy is not towards a person here. Envy means Arjuna feeling helpless. He is not able to understand what Krishna is saying. Like us. We are not able to understand what Krishna is saying. And then we ignore it. And that's envy. Suppose you ignore something, especially coming from an authority, great personality or absolute truth, Krishna himself. And if I am not able to understand that and I am ignoring it, that's envy. That's envy. That's the word. It is in that context Krishna has used that word envy. Not as on a personal level. What he has given us as knowledge, you are not able to rise up to the level of understanding what he is saying. Understanding means that you are not able to experience it, you are not able to connect with it in any way. And then you are rejecting it, saying that it's not making any sense. And that's envy. That's what he is referring to, right? Our intelligence is not able to accept it, right? And able to give any importance to it from our mind and intelligence, not able to give any importance to it, right? That's what's called envy, right? And that's one type of envy. Then there is another type of envy. We will not accept from anybody. Only if somebody else tells me, I will accept it. Knowledge can come from many sources, is it not? So instead of accepting from different people who may have different knowledge about it, but you are rejecting all of them and you are saying that if I get this only from such and such a person, I will accept it. If you say like that, that's envy. That's envy, right? So you can say it is a kind of a prejudice, right? Suppose you don't have any prejudice, no bias inside, right? And if your brain, intelligence is not causing any problem, if it is in a shanti state, and your heart is fully open in that way, you can remember the word buddhi, what they used in the Bhagavad Gita is all, in Vedam, it's not referring to the brain. Normally we consider brain as buddhi, isn't it? It's very brainy, we say. But brain has no meaning as far as buddhi is concerned, right? Buddhi generally refers to the heart. Capacity of your heart to able to accept the knowledge. That's what is called buddhi. Buddhi means the capacity of your heart to accept the knowledge, right? And that is not in the head, it is in the heart, right? And so, another thing, body, mind, all these things is in the buddhi. This is another important thing. body, mind, these things are in the buddhi, right? So, and that buddhi is the heart, what we refer to as the heart. Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtadi, that hrid, where Andaryami is present. So, you see the difference between modern science and how the rishis see things. Modern science analyzes everything through the brain. The thing is, they have found out brain cells and all these things here, right? Spiritual life has nothing to do with the brain. Spiritual life is centered around here, where Andaryami is present. That is where all acceptance comes, all your realization comes, and finally experience Krishna within. It all happens here. And that is where buddhi in the spiritual life is. In Shastram it is. So buddhi is not the brain, what we refer to here. Buddhi is the heart or the hridayam inside, where all experience happens in spiritual life. That is the center. And that is where pratyabhijna happens as well. So that is why when you hear things, if you are able to hear with the heart rather than with the brain, that's a difficult thing, isn't it? If you are able to hear with the heart rather than with the brain, then it is possible to experience it. This Andaryami's presence, right? Because this is not a subject for understanding. That's the first thing to know. There's nothing to understand about Andaryami, right? Because information gathering is with the mind. You collect information from the world, right? Now, think about this. In this life now, God came to know so many things, information we collected. What has happened now? With all the information I have collected in my life, from different places, different sources, through different agencies, right? So, by getting all the information, I realize now that my problems have not been solved. Problems of birth, death, old age, disease, major problems of life, I couldn't do anything about it by collecting information from the world, right? So, and I have understood so many things in this world, which now I realize that hasn't helped me in any way, my real problem solving, right? And so therefore, getting to know more and more things in this world, information from everywhere all the time, is not the way to go, right? So that is why in Shastra, when they say Panditiyam, means that it's not studying something and getting to know about that. Instead, getting to realize Atma or the soul is called Panditiyam. Panditiyam. Panda Vishayam. Panditiyam. Right? Mandidaha. Right? So, so in other words, one who is able to move away from the influence of the mind and the intelligence and able to see it completely in a different way, that they experience what is happening inside and directly facing the Andaryami inside, Atma inside, or able to experience inside, presence of Andaryami inside, and one who is situated on that state is called Pandita. You know when Krishna uses that word Pandita, I don't know what we have understood. Vidyavine sambhane brahmane gavihastini shuni jaiva shobhagaija pandita samadarshina, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, right? So we have understood something by what word one, but actual meaning of Pandita is this. See how much difference it is, what Krishna is saying and what we have understood. So far away from everything. Years and years you keep the same understanding inside. Pandita means we think, oh, one who has studied all the Shastram with them and he is able to memorize all the verses and he is a scholar and all that. That's how we see the Pandita. Actual Pandita, Krishna is saying, that is the one who has directed experience in the Andaryami inside. He is the one who is addressed as Pandita, right? So, therefore, not studying a loads of books, but you can use the books to find out the realization, to get the realization, right? But purpose of satsangam is not to study books, rather find to experience this Antaryami's presence inside. So that is one important thing to understand before we begin this chapter, right? In Bhagavad Gita, this 13th chapter, as I mentioned before, is a very important chapter. It is called as Kshetra Kshetra Vibhaga Yoga. That is the title given to that, isn't it? Kshetra Kshetra Vibhaga Yoga. The title is Kshetra Kshetra Vibhaga Yoga, right? So, in the 7th chapter, in the 4th and the 5th verse, as I mentioned before, the 7th chapter is the knowledge of the Absolute. That's the title given. 7th chapter, right? Knowledge of the Absolute. That's an English title. And there, it was spoken in the 4th and the 5th verse. If you look in the 7th chapter, 4th and the 5th verse, Krishna mentioned that Bhumi Rabhanalo Vayu Kammano Buddhi Revacha Ahangara Idiyame Bhina Prakriti Ashtatha Abrayam Idastvanyam Prakriti Vidhime Param Jivabhudam Mahabhaho Yedam Dhalidev Jagat. Those two verses, 4th and 5th verses, right? There, Prakriti was spoken. Ishvara Krishna's Prakriti. Prakriti, what Prakriti means, right? And there he said that one, he mentioned that the three modes of material nature is Prakriti. Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam is Prakriti, right? And then Prakriti he has separated in 8 different ways. Ashtatha Prakriti it's called. Everything is very subtle in the Bhagavad Gita. We are just taking what is written in the book, and we understand whatever we have understood in our own way, which is so different from what Krishna is saying. That is the problem. You see, so many things in Bhagavad Gita, we think that we have read it so many times and we have understood so many things. And then some flowery language we tell others also what I have understood, but which is far away from the truth, what Krishna is saying, right? So this Prakriti, in one way of expressing Prakriti, is three modes of material nature, Trigunam. And that Prakriti has got these 8 components. Bhumi, Apam, Analam, Vayu, Kham, Manasa, Buddhi, Ahangaram, altogether 8. So what he is saying here is that this Prakriti is responsible for samsaram. Prakriti is responsible for samsaram. Remember what I mentioned, what samsaram is first. In the beginning we said what samsaram is, right? Prakriti is responsible for samsaram. Krishna will make some statements in the Bhagavad Gita, and then you get a shock of your life, which you could never, like as I said yesterday, nobody is doing any karmam here. In the presence of Chaitanyam, Prakriti is doing everything. That's Krishna's profound statement. Right? Nobody is doing any karmam in this world. In the presence of Chaitanyam, Prakriti is doing everything. Krishna says like that. In between, you come with your ahangaram and you are thinking that you are doing it. That's your problem. This is Krishna's words on that. Ahangaram, bhumi, prakriti, kriyamanani, gunai karmani, sarvasha. Krishna is saying to us explicitly, three modes of material nature, which is Prakriti, is doing all the karmam here in the presence of Chaitanyam. Paramatma Chaitanyam, all karmam is done by Prakriti. In the middle of that, you come with your ahangaram, jiva, and he starts saying that I am doing everything, and that is the reality. Nobody is doing anything here. Prakriti is doing everything in this world. In creation, everything is done by Prakriti. we, our ahankaram comes and I take it over and say that I am doing it. This is the misunderstanding. So there itself everything went wrong. There itself everything went wrong. So once you have come with ahankaram, that, see, this ahankaram is not the one ahankaram we normally talk about. This ahankaram is different. Normally we say somebody's got ahankaram means we'll say, oh, he's very proud and he thinks himself is very big and all that. That is personal ahankaram it is. Jiva ahankaram. But this ahankaram what he is talking about is this due to identification with the body, when one starts thinking that he is doing everything, that's ahankaram. That's ahankaram. Not that he is thinking of himself as big or small, that's not the one. What he is talking about is, due to my false identification with the body, due to that, I am thinking, my ahankaram feels that I am doing everything. And that is this ahankaram what Krishna is talking about. Bina prakriti ashtada. So this thing, what Krishna mentions here, that the prakriti is responsible for material existence, samsara. Prakriti is responsible for that, right? So, and therefore, he divided prakriti into two. One he called it as apara prakriti, and the other one he called it as para prakriti. That prakriti, he divided that into two. Apara prakriti and another one, which is referred to as kshetrajna, what is referred to as, is called as the para prakriti. So that is how this chapter begins, right? So, last chapter, which is the 12th chapter, right, was Bhakti Yoga, isn't it? This is Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga, titled like that, right? In that 12th chapter, Krishna spoke about a devotee who is a symptoms of a devotee, right? Who is a devotee and what you want to know what bhakti is, you have to study that chapter. What bhakti is and who a devotee is, right? In Bhagavad Gita's language, bhakti means knowledge of the self. You see, there's some problem with this bhakti word. So much misunderstood word it is, this word bhakti, right? And so many people have given so many interpretations to it. But in Bhagavad Gita, if you go by the 12th chapter, all those interpretations doesn't match. You can call it as bhakti in one level because as a part of sadhana. Like people go on parikrama, right? There are some sannyasis say they have been doing parikrama for the last 50 years. They have been doing parikrama. And every year in a ritualistic way they go for Vrindavana parikrama, Mayapur parikrama, Jagannathpuri parikrama, everything they do. Every year they go and do it. For 50 years they have been doing it, right? And then they are saying sometimes that, well, I didn't make any progress in spiritual life. After doing 50 years parikrama, he is saying this. Why? Why is that? Reason is this, that if you move away from what Krishna has spoken and you start giving different interpretations to bhakti in your own way and start doing, thinking that you are doing the right thing always. I'm not saying parikrama is the wrong thing, but parikrama won't take you to self-realization. It is not mentioned anywhere in the Shastram. Parikrama won't take you to self-realization. Self-realization only can come from the knowledge what Krishna has spoken and strictly adhering to that. If you move away from that, it won't happen. So, in Bhagavad Gita's language, bhakti means knowledge of the self. Knowledge of the self, right? So, in no other places in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Bhagavadam, what we think of bhakti, what we mean by bhakti, Krishna has not even given any reference to it anywhere in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Bhagavadam. For example, putting the tilak on, putting the tulsi mala in the neck, and similarly going to the temple, and chanting the holy name, all these things has not been spoken in the Bhagavad Gita at all. You see that? It's not spoken in the Bhagavad Gita anywhere, right? Similarly, you know, devotees sometimes, they cry out of ecstasy when they hear Krishna's pastimes. And sometimes tears come from their eyes, the hair standing up. All those things is not spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavatam it is there, but not in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Deliberately, Krishna has not spoken that in the Bhagavad Gita. Deliberately did that because that Krishna wanted to present bhakti in its pure form, without adulterating with all the other things, right? So, there are many reasons why Krishna has not spoken that in the Bhagavad Gita like that, right? Because the symptoms what you exhibit as bhakti, most of them can be imitated also. Is it not? The symptoms what you exhibit as bhakti can be imitated. Sometimes people imitate and show that, right? For example, you can put nice vibhuti or tilak, and similarly rudraksham or tulsi garlands and things like that. And similarly, you can put the sacred thread and wearing a saffron dhoti and saffron kurta, and gives an impression to everybody that, and the danda in the hand, or naturally you think that that person must be a very spiritually elevated person, right? So, and there is no restriction on that. Anybody can take sannyasam, right? And so wherever many people do this, right, to be wanted to be respected in the society, and for that they take sannyasam. To be respected in the society. It's not that out of realization they are taking it. Just to be respected in the society, and for that they will switch over to dress, change in the dress and put these things on and present themselves as a... So they are all external things, right? And those things, Krishna knows the problem with that. If you give that as a symptom of spiritual life or of a devotee, it can mislead so many other people. So because of that reason, he didn't want to talk about it. External symptoms. Do you understand what I'm saying? See, if you give importance to external symptoms, and if that becomes the standard, and people start imitating that, what will happen in the society? A lot of people will get misguided. That is the end result of that. End result of that. And sannyasa ashramam will become a mockery that way. Krishna didn't want that. So therefore, deliberately, external symptoms, he did not mention about it in the Bhagavad Gita anywhere. Whereas, all the internal symptoms, like what he said, advesta sarvabhudanam, maitra karuna evacha, maitri bhavam, not hating anybody, and always remaining in a happy state, shanti state, and not giving pain to anyone else. All these kind of, and even if the world gives him problem, pain, he does not retaliate, react to that. In this way, so many things Krishna said about a devotee in the last chapter, right? So that is all the topic of Bhakti Yogam when he discussed that, right? So if you ask the question, can anyone imitate these qualities? Qualities also you can imitate, like the way you imitate other things, right? So, but if you imitate these things, you will be caught. The falsity of that. Imitation will be caught, right? Because it cannot stay permanently, these qualifications. That is why internal qualities are more important than the external ones. External ones, anybody can do it. To buy some saffron cloth and to put on, it's not so difficult, isn't it? And to get a danda. And so many young people do this without proper thinking, that they go and take sannyasam from some madham and then wander around with the danda in the hand wherever they go. He's a sannyasi, everybody feels the sannyasi had come. And it is very easily you can mislead people that way. And some others, after trying it for a few years, they say, it's not working for me. And through the danda and he has gone. So, is it not better than doing that, to stay what you are, and not fool others in that way? That is the problem with this external. So many sannyasis have done that. They threw the danda away and then they don't last very long. For a few years, just they feel some fancy out of it. Having a danda in the hand, everybody offer obeisances to you because you have taken sannyasa. It gives you a nice aura around you. You build up, but inside nothing. Inside is empty. Everything is outside, right? So therefore, Andarika Lakshanam means the internal symptoms. Krishna has given importance to it. Didn't want to talk about the external things at all because he knows very well how we are, what we are like, right? So if you say, Krishna is saying there that, in a simple language, if you say that prayam, if comes from a person like that, with all these qualities, one who has got shanti inside, he is a devotee, Krishna is saying. That 8 verses, what we discussed yesterday, we have to remember those verses always. What is Krishna pointing at? He's telling us that Advaishta Sarva Bhudanam, Maitra Karuna Evacha, Nirmamo, Nirahangara, Samam Dukham, Sukhashami, Sandushta Satatam Yogi, Yad Alma, Dridanishaya, May Arpita Mano Buddhi, Yomal Bhakta Same Priya. And then he said a few other verses after that. All saying, who is dear to me? Krishna says. He is a devotee, he is dear to me. He's put it like that, right? So Priyam. You will see there, in all the verses he has used that word Priyam. Yomal Bhakta Same Priya, he says. He is dear to me. And he finished the chapter also with the word Priyam. If you look at the 12th chapter, in about those 8 verses, he has used the word Priyam in almost 4 or 5 verses. Yomal Bhakta Same Priya. Same Priya. He keeps repeating this. Yeah. Priyam. So, what does Priyam mean? Priyam means, one who has got shanti inside, he will have priyam, right? And priyam comes from atma. Priyam comes from atma. That is the beauty of that word, priyam. Priyam comes from atma, right? Analpa vastu, that means, what is not atma, jadam, there cannot be priyam. Priyam cannot come from jadam. Priyam can only come from atma. That's the first thing to understand. Why that word Krishna has used there? You look at that verses. How many times he has used that word Priyam in the 12th chapter? Sandushta Sadadam Yogi. Yad Atma Dadanishaya. May Arpita Manobuddha. Yomal Bhakta Same Priya. He said. Similarly, next verse. Mukto aya sachame priya. Then 16th verse, Yomal Bhakta Same Priya. And similarly, he says 17th verse, Bhakti Manya Same Priya. And then 19th verse, he is saying that Bhakti Manya Priya Nara. And finally, the last verse, Adiva Me Priya, he says. Why Krishna couldn't find any other word? Why has he used this one word Priya in almost all the 8 verses when he talks about a devotee? He used that word Priya exclusively for a devotee. Priya means shanti, and Priyam can only come from Atma. It cannot come from Jadavastu. From dead matter, Priyam cannot come. Remember, we discussed this before. When you see something, remember that, Brahmasuri. Almanastu kamaya sarvamidam priyam bhavadi, said Lord Brahma's Upanishad statement it is. Almanastu kamaya sarvamidam priyam bhavadi. Suppose you see an object, and if I like it, where is the liking coming from? It's not coming from the object, it's coming from Andaryami inside. Isn't it? This is the knowledge. This is knowledge. When you see a nice thing in this world, if I get attracted to it and I like it, where is the liking coming from? It's coming from Antaryami inside, not from the dead matter. Do you understand what I'm saying? That this jada vastu cannot give you priyam. Priyam can only come from Antaryami inside. That's the underlying principle. Atmanastu kamaya sarvamidam priyam bhavati. Every priyam what you feel in this world is coming from the Atma, not anywhere else. In Brahmasturi we discuss this. Lord Brahma, you know, when he talks about it, is it not? So, Krishna menam avaihitam alpanam akhilalpanam jagadidaya sopetra dehiva bhadi maya. Priyam comes from Krishna, andaryami inside. Yeah? So, it is keeping that in mind. So, you can see, this is how you have to study Bhagavad Gita, verse by verse, look at it. Why Krishna has used that word priyam so freely in all the verses? Out of the 8 verses, practically in every verse he has put that word priyam in that. To make us realize that priyam comes from Atma. Priyam comes from Atma. So devotee means he has this realization that priyam comes from him, Antaryami, right? So, so when you like something, that liking, feeling of liking something, where is it coming from? It's not coming from the object. It's coming from inside us. Even that, people find it difficult to understand. It is like that. People find that difficult to understand. Because throughout life, we thought it is coming from the object. And suddenly Krishna comes and puts this bomb and says to us, it's not coming from any object, it's coming from me, he's saying. Krishna is saying, it's coming from me, right? So this liking and dislike, all these things, is coming from. So this is why they're saying like this, that you like somebody, for example, right? Priyam comes from inside. You like someone, right? And I do a lot of things to keep that person happy because I like him. So therefore, I'm doing that, right? When you do that, you experience a happiness from that. When you are doing something for somebody whom you like very much, and you are doing for that person, when you are doing that, you experience something inside. That's priyam. That is priyam, right? And what is that, what you are experiencing inside, when you have done something for somebody, that is very important thing, right? So, I'll give you an example. Suppose sometimes, it is common in India that when you go with small children to somebody's house, the other members in their house will pick up the child and give a kiss to the child. They'll kiss the child to make the feel happy, the child. Actually, child is not enjoying it. Child doesn't want you with all your beard if you kiss a child. Baby feels it very unhappy. It's not happy about it, right? With all his beard and moustache and everything, you are kissing the child, right? So, but still he will kiss the child. And at that time, why? Because he is getting the happiness inside. He is getting the happiness by kissing the little child, right? So, sukham, happiness, come from priyam, right? And priyam comes from the Atma. That child is, when you are kissing the child is not very happy when you are kissing, because it is rubbing your, all the beard and moustache and all on its soft face, and it will turn the face away when you are trying to kiss the baby, the little child. But you are getting happiness out of it, right? So, so in order to understand this word, priyam, so priyam is an important word. It is in the Upanishads, it is in the Bhagavad Gita, it's everywhere, this word priyam. Right? So, this priyam comes from Antaryami, Krishna is saying. This priyam comes from Antaryami, right? So, so in order to understand the priyam, you got to know Antaryami. So priyam is another word for bhakti. Another word for bhakti, right? So Krishna's siddhantam is that this para bhakti or priyam, you can call it another word, right? In order to get that experience of premam or parabhakti or priyam, you got to know the antaryami from whom it is coming. To get to know what priyam is, you got to know the antaryami inside, right? And unless you know antaryami, this bhakti or priyam or parabhakti cannot happen. That is the siddhantam. Siddhantam is that the priyam what you experience, in order that to understand where it's coming from, you have to know the source, which is antaryami. Without that, you won't understand that the priyam is coming from antaryami. Yeah. So that is siddhantam. Siddhantam, right? And bhakti, normally, bhakti has got two aspects. One is our sadhana bhakti, what everybody is doing it. And the other one is the parabhakti, right? And sadhana bhakti is what we all do. Everybody understands what sadhana bhakti is, right? So, and if your intentions or motive is good in the sadhana bhakti, right? Then deity worship, and similarly chanting the holy name, and kirtanam, and all other kinds of upasana, all these are part of that sadhana bhakti, right? And what will happen is they are all, in due course of time, they will all help for chitta shuddhi, right? And when chitta shuddhi happens, the mind becomes, the mind which is very distracted, it comes able to focus on something more, better, right? So, and at some point in time, this upasana you were doing, or the sadhana bhakti you were doing to a particular deity, particular form, the sadhana bhakti you were doing, at some point in time, your attention will go away from that, and attention will turn towards the person who is doing the sadhana. That is how spiritual life is. That is when you can say that your spiritual life is going in the right direction. For a long period of time, you will continue your sadhana bhakti with the deity and with your chanting process, and all other upasana processes, what you are doing, bhajana, kirtanam and all that. You will all do it all the time, you will keep on doing it. But at some point in time, they are all helpful for chitta shuddhi, but when chitta shuddhi, how to understand, has the proper chitta shuddhi has come to a person or not? That's the question. When chitta shuddhi comes to a person properly, the symptom is like this. His attention goes away from the object he was worshipping, and attention turned inwards to the person who is worshipping, right? That means he leaves the upasana process and turns towards the person who is doing the upasana, right? And Upanishad also says this very clearly, right? Nedam nadidam upasade ye chakshushana pashyati. Because one by whose presence inside, it is because of that presence inside only that you are able to see things in this world. You are able to do your upasana. Is it not? You are able to do your upasana, seeing the deity, hearing the kirtan, chanting the holy name. All this is happening because of the presence of antaryami inside. And when your attention moves away from the deity and from all other things, external things, turn towards the person from the antaryami, by whose presence all these things are happening, then that is what Krishna is referring to as the antaryami. That's the antaryami. So you can see that at some point in time, okay, all the sadhana bhakti is necessary for chitta shuddhi purposes. When chitta shuddhi becomes perfect, or when you have acquired sufficient chitta shuddhi inside, the symptom of that is your attention leaves away from the external things and attention goes back towards the Antaryami. That is the proof of that. That's the proof of that, right? So, all upasana, external sadhana, external upasana, the ultimate goal is to turn our attention towards Antaryami. If the attention doesn't go to Antaryami, this external sadhana is not going to help very much. It will go on for the rest of the life in the same way, without any change. And that is, you see, this is the shastram behind it. And if you don't accept shastram and do things on interest, on your own ideas, then it's not going to work. It won't work. It has to be based on Krishna's point is this, that sadhana bhakti is necessary. But sadhana bhakti towards a deity in a temple, and your other sadhana processes like chanting the holy name, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Ekadashi, Upavasam, and all other things what you do externally is all for Chitta Shuddhi. But once Chitta Shuddhi has happened to a person, the symptom of that is his attention is not outside anymore. It has gone completely towards the Antaryami, right? And that is the goal of all sadhana bhakti, upasana, right? And that is the point Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na shojadi na kankshadi sama sarveshu bhudeshu mad bhaktim labhade param. He is saying that, is it not? That it is that point what he is referring to, that verse. At that point that verse applies. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na shojadi na kankshadi na shojadi na kankshadi is Chitta Shuddhi. Another word for Chitta Shuddhi is na shochadi na kamshadi. What else? Sama sarveshu bhudeshu. At that time, mad bhaktim vyabhade param. Krishna is saying, that's the time you turn inwards. That's the time you turn inwards, right? And then again in the 11th chapter, if you look, Bhagavad Gita is a very subtle topic. It's not so simple as we think it is, right? Bhaktyamam abhijanadi yavan yasyasmi tattvada tatomam tattvadojnyatva vishadetada anandaram. Krishna is saying there. You look at that verse carefully. Analyze that verse. You will find out that Krishna is pointing out to something. Bhaktyamam abhijanadi yavan yasyasmi tattvada tatomam tattvadojnyatva vishadetada anandaram. He is saying. What does that mean? It means that through bhakti, sadhana bhakti, you come first. And you get to know me, abhijanadi, in tattvam. First you understand through tattvajnanam comes to you. After tattvajnanam comes, bhaktyama abhijanadi yavan yashyasmi tattvada tadomam tattvado jnatva. What happens? Vishade tadanandaram. You enter into me, he is saying. In the 11th chapter, if you look at it, you will see there. So these are important things in the Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna is explaining these things in the Bhagavad Gita, he is trying to tell us that. So, in other words, what he was saying was, after you become Brahma Bhutam, bhakti comes. According to that verse, is it not? Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, na shojadi na kamshadi, sama sarveshu bhudeshu, mad bhaktim labhade param. So, parabhakti or bhakti comes to a person after Brahma Bhuta stage, after Brahma Bhutam stage. So, bhakti and self-realization, bhakti is the result of self-realization. It's a result of self-realization. Bhakti is the result of self-realization. We have to be careful when we say this, because people misunderstand things. Sadhana bhakti is not considered even bhakti, to be honest about it. In Bhagavad Gita or in the Bhagavadam, sadhana bhakti is not even taken as bhakti. Bhakti, according to Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, is para bhakti, which comes after self-realization. After you become free from bodily identity, what happens to us at that stage? Yeah. So, therefore, after talking about bhakti yogam in the last chapter, in this chapter, Krishna is first talking about self-realization, in the 13th chapter. 12th chapter, Krishna spoke about bhakti. And in the 13th chapter, after talking about bhakti, he gradually opens up in Bhagavad Gita the door towards the self-realization first, right? So, and that is what this chapter is. Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga, which is called Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. We'll continue after the break.
Chedo Darpanam Arjanam Vaumaha Davagdi Nirvavanam Shayakai Davachandriya Vidaranam Vidyavadhu Jeevanam Anandam Budivardhanam Pradipada Purnamrada Swadhanam Sarvapna Subhanam Varam Vijayate Shri Krishna Sangirtanam Namnamakari Bahudanija Sarva Shakti Tatrarpida Nimida Smaranena Kala Edadrishita Vakrapa Bhagavan Mamabi Durdeva Midrashamiha Janina Nuraga Trinadabi Shunichena Tarorabi Sahishuna Amanina Manadena Kirtani Sadahari Nathanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavidamba Jagadisha Kamai Mama Janmani Janmani Shwari Bhavadal Bhaktirahari Dugitvai Ayi Nandadanu Jagingaram Padidamam Shame Bhavambudo Krupayadava Pada Pankajasthita Dholi Sadrasham Vijindaya Nayanam Galada Shudharaya Vatanam Gadgadarudhaya Gira Polagar Nijidam Gadava Bhutavan Namagrahane Bhavishari Yuga idam nimeshena chakshusha pravisha idam shunya idam jagal sarvam govinda virahename ashlishyava padaradam pinashtumam adarshanam marmahadam karotuva yathathadava vidadhatu lembado malpranathasunayvana para sarvatra govinda nama sankirtanam govinda govinda.
So, 12th chapter was about Bhakti Yoga. And first of all, before Krishna said that in the 18th chapter, that the Bhakti comes after Brahma Bhudam stage, the proper Bhakti, not the Bhakti what we talk about. Proper Bhakti comes after Brahma Buddha Prasannatma Nashojani Nagamkshadi Samasarveshu Bhudeshu Mad Bhaktim Labhade Param. He is saying that, is it not? So, Parabhakti, what he mentioned, which he has spoken in the 11th chapter also, at the end of 11th chapter, Bhaktyamam Abhijanadi Yavanyashasmi Tattvada Tatomam Tattvado Jnatva Vishade Tadanandaram. He is saying that. So, in this chapter, he is talking about that Kshetra Kshetra Vibhaga Yogam. Understand this, that Kshetra means field, agriculture field, you can say it is Kshetram, right? In other words, generally Kshetram means where you sow the seed and the crops comes up there. That's what the word means. So, it is in that context it is spoken there. Why does he use that word kshetram? The word kshetram is used. Something that gets in due course of time gets destroyed is a kshetram. In due course of time, right? Or in other words, it keeps changing. Parinamam, change happens, but in a very gradual way. Not immediately, it takes long time to change, right? So, spiritual life, for example. What is spiritual life? If one can experience self, Antaryami, and if this helps, Kshetram helps for that, then it is good, right? Otherwise, it is all useless. I'll explain that more. Then, spiritual life means self-realization or Antaryami realization. You can call in different names, or experience of the self, Antaryami inside. In another word used is Anubhuti. In Shastram, there are so many words for that. Atma Anubhuti, Isharanibhuti, various things, right? Or they also say Satya-Sakshalkaram. So, how do I get that realization? And that's a question one who has come to spiritual life has to ask the question. How do I realize the self? How do I realize the truth? How do I get that experience, right? And how to get to that stage? Most of the people who come to spiritual life, they don't want self-realization or get to know the truth. There's only very few people who will be serious in spiritual life about self-realization. Very few. Majority of the people, they come because suffering from material life and to try to find some relief from the suffering in this world, materially or other problems. Not that everyone who has come to spiritual life is looking for self-realization. No, it's not never like that, right? And in other words, they are not serious enough about it. And the people come with a different understanding. Some people come to understand certain things about spiritual life. And in due course of time, if I get it, it is well and good. If I don't get it, it's okay. That approach also there among people, right? So people are generally in different categories. It is very difficult to say that everyone who comes to spiritual path is with this one goal of realizing the self. That is very few though, very few. Majority of the people come because they just want some relief from their material miseries or material suffering and to give some kind of, to engage in some way that it keeps them occupied with something, some satisfaction from that. So, in Kathopanishad, this is spoken in a way, Shravanayobi bahubur yona labhyaha, Shrunnandobi bahavo yamna vidyo, Asharya vakto kushalasya labdha, Asharya yada kushalani shishta. If you understand that verse, Kathopanishad is saying this, that lot of people come to spiritual life, but everybody doesn't get to the goal. They don't reach the goal. That's what he's saying there. Sharvanayabi bahubir yona labhyaha. Lot of people come, they hear, but they're not very concerned about whether they get it or not. They just take it, it's okay, I've heard something. And that's well and good, right? And shrunandobi bahuvo yona vidyuhu. Even if you have heard it properly, still that realization don't come to them. So people who come, Sharanayabhi bahubir yona labhyaha, Shrunandobhi bahavo yamna vidyuhu. And they never get it at the end. Asharya vakta kushalasya labdha, Asharya jnada kushalani shishta. It's a famous verse in the Kathopanishad to talk about the people who come to spiritual life. Yeah. So the ultimate goal that I want to realize the truth, I just want to realize the truth, and that they are very, very, such people are very rare, he says. Rare in the sense, Ascharyam it is. Ascharyam means it's difficult to believe that there will be many people if they are really interested in spiritual self-realization. That is an Ascharyam. It's an unbelievable thing to get somebody who is really serious in spiritual life. Most of the people come and they take to spiritual life for some reason, whatever they have in their mind. And in the process, if they get any benefit, that's fine. If they don't get anything, it's okay. That is the approach most of the people have, right? So, and similarly, he say here, what is spoken, able to capture it properly, they are also very few. That's what he's saying there. Shrunandobi bahavo yamna vidyuhu. Those who hear that and who experience it at the end, they hear that, but at the same time, in order to experience Krishna inside as Antaryami, And to keep that alone as the goal in life, and to be completely focused on that, and in that process they will lose everything else in life. Their family life, happy material life, everything finishes with that, right? Such people are still rare, he's saying. Upanishad is saying, such people are still rare. So, this separation is important because all other experience in life is not permanent, isn't it? Everything what else you do in life is not permanent. All related to the body, and when the body leaves, everything goes with that. It's over, right? So, just like in normal life, you're hungry. We get some food, hunger is gone, right? And then after some time again hunger will come. And similarly we have different desires to enjoy life, different bhogam, desire to enjoy different sense enjoyment, right? So when you experience that sense gratification, you feel some happiness at that moment. And when once that is over, again you go back, fall back into the same old situations, right? Just like you want to feel very tired, you want to sleep, you slept. And after you have woken up, you feel better. In the same way, all these things are not in our control. These things are not in our control. For example, you get hungry, then you get food, you eat, and you don't have any control over that, in the sense that hunger happens, comes, natural way, in the desire comes to eat. And the demand for the food comes from inside. Similarly, demand for the sleep comes from inside. Without, you have no control over that. The sleep comes, you will fall asleep straight away. Right? So, they are called Prakriti Dharmam. It comes from the Prakriti. Prakriti creates that in us, the urge in us to eat, the urge to sleep, and so many things like that. Right? So, it's a very serious topic, these things. Right? And if you understand this, what Upanishad is saying here, that this knowledge of the self is inside everybody. Everybody has got this knowledge of the self, right? And if you are able to make contact with that knowledge, right, able to make a connection with it, then everything will happen. Life will be perfect, and in that way, the sadhana, everything becomes unnecessary after that. There is no need for a sadhana after that, right? And it doesn't require much of an intelligence either. Intelligence also is not important. But if you start thinking that spiritual life is all enjoyment and happiness, if I have to get from happiness and fun out of spiritual life, then it won't work. It won't work, right? You can say Bhagavad Gita, giving examples from the world and entertain people through Bhagavad Gita. People do all these kind of things. And people get attracted that way. Somebody is giving a lot of jokes when he is talking about this serious message of Bhagavad Gita. You can mix up with loads of entertaining way. You can present it like that, right? If you do like that, what will happen is the serious message in the Bhagavad Gita will be lost. Because topic is so serious. That's the point Krishna is making there, right? So, in the material life, for example, Bhagavad Gita, how, if you start asking the question, how can I apply Bhagavad Gita into my material life in this world? If you ask that question, it is a problem. There is no answer to that. Yeah, it is not meant for that, first of all. But in the modern world, the tendency is like that. People ask this all the time. How can I practically apply Bhagavad Gita into my life? No, you change your life to suit Bhagavad Gita. Not you change Bhagavad Gita to suit your way of life. This is where everything goes wrong. All these big, big propaganda going on in this world, people go and give training to others, runs courses, seminars and all, how to apply Bhagavad Gita in your life. It's meaningless. It has no meaning at all. Because the very message of Bhagavad Gita is to get out of this material suffering and material entanglement, right? So that is why it is said like this, that people ask this, how can I apply Bhagavad Gita into my management? How to use it in the management, right? If you start thinking like that, you will never understand Bhagavad Gita. You're far away from that, right? So to understand Bhagavad Gita with its seriousness, how serious it is, right? And then instead of applying to management and to our material life, how to make money with that, and but without knowing that Bhagavad Gita is not for any of these things, not for any of these things, right? There is no point, you know, like they say that you tie the horse behind the cart. There's an expression like that, isn't it? Right. So, if you do that, it will not help. You have to tie the horse in the front of the cart. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita is to change us from our material understanding of life into spiritual path. If that is not done, that course and seminar and all, whatever you do with Bhagavad Gita, is a waste of time, right? And this is the reason, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, there is always every chapter finishes with, this is Adhyatma Shastram, Yoga Shastram, Brahma Vidya, Idi Bhagavad Gita so, Upanishad so, Brahma Vidyayam, Yoga Shastre. Why all these specific words used there? To get this point across to us. This is Brahma Vidya it is. It is not for your material happiness. It is not for your, making your success in a career or profession or anything like that. This is pure Brahma Vidya it is. Yoga Shastram it is, right? So, and that has to be understood exactly in the same way. Not in any other way, right? And why we find that difficult? Because we got used to learning many things in this world with a lot of effort. It's not years and years of study in the university, colleges, this, that way. So many things we approached, the approach was like that. That's the way it is structured. So, because we have got used to that system, now when you come to Bhagavad Gita and you apply the same process to Bhagavad Gita, then you find it difficult. Because that is not the process to understand Bhagavad Gita, to study Bhagavad Gita, right? So, so even though Krishna is saying, Ajahn Swami also mentioned that, as he said that the, what he mentioned earlier, that this is already we have got it, Andaryami, Krishna inside, yeah? Bhudalpa Vishayatva, it is, Bhudalpa Vishayam it is. Something what you have already got and you are saying it is very difficult to get that. So, for this reason only, that from childhood, from when you go to the school, from then onwards, this process be continued like this throughout school, colleges, universities and everything, right? So, like you learn the mathematics, 1 plus 1, 2, 2 plus 2, 4, like that, right? So, and then we learned how to memorize things. And with a lot of struggle, we have gone through this education system, modern education system, right? And in that process, a lot of things has entered into our buddhi and it stayed in the buddhi. As I mentioned, buddhi is different than the brain, right? So, Shastram says, self-realization is not so difficult if you are not complicating it with your mind and intelligence. And Krishna is already not something has to come from outside, is already inside us, right? For example, money is not available. Money you have to go to the bank or you have to work somewhere to earn that, right? Even the body is not available to us. Body is there, but when this body will cheat us, we don't know. Any moment it will cheat us. It can become sick, it can be dead and gone. That means your connection with the body is over. But therefore, body is not under your control, wealth is not under your control, you have no access to that. Similarly, your mind also, sometimes you can see our own mind. I keep saying my mind, but the same mind threatens me sometimes from inside. It creates fear in different ways, right? So, sometimes it can go into about future, thinking about the future and get worried about it. And that way the same mind inside me threatens, creates fear inside me, right? So even though it is my mind, he can become an enemy to me. He can create fear inside me and cause problems, right? And so if you look at it this way, what can you trust in this world? Can you trust your body? Can you trust your mind? Can you trust your wealth? What can you trust in this world? None of them. None of them are trustworthy, right? So, in order to, this is the situation, and this you have to come to terms with it, that this is the reality, right? There is nothing in this world which you can take shelter of. None of them you can take shelter of, right? Only if you come to that conclusion, only then you will inquire, then whom should I, where should I take shelter? That question will come then. If I can't take shelter of any of these things, I can't take shelter of the money, I can't take shelter of my body, I can't even take shelter of my mind, none of them are reliable, they can cheat anybody, anytime, and they can leave us. So therefore, proper inquiry begins when you come to this conclusion first. Ashrayam, like Bhagavatam says, Ashrayasthanam, right? So, everything what we are taking shelter of now is like the boat with a hole at the bottom. If you use a boat with a hole at the bottom and you start sailing, gradually water will come inside through the hole and it will drown the boat eventually, right? So in the same way, people are thinking that I am doing my karmam properly, karmanushtanam properly, right? And Upanishads will say about Vaidika Karma Anushtanam, people who are supposed to follow the different Anushtanam based on the Vaidika Karmam, right? Adridaha Plavaha, right? And all these boats, plav means boat, all these boats are Adridam. You cannot rely on any of them, right? Any moment water can get inside. So therefore, even your other anushtanam, the other sadhana processes, what you do, is like that because all anushtanam, what you do, anushtanam means your daily sadhana processes, whatever you are doing, they are all based on the body. Based on the body. Only when you have the body, you can do the anushtanam. It's not. So, and the moment your body becomes sick, one day it will get sick and it won't be able to do anything. Then all your anushtanam stops with that. You cannot go to the temple, you are sick. You cannot even get up from the bed, you are sick. You cannot chant the holy name because you have become sick. Right? So, similarly, suppose you have studied Shastram a lot and you have understood a lot of things from the Shastram. And suppose you got the dementia or Alzheimer's disease, things like that. You cannot remember anything, what you have studied whole life. So what happens then? Right? So you can see from that, that the, that, and whatever you have collected information through studying the Shastram or the sadhana, what you are doing, all these things are not under your control. They can all leave you. You struggled hard, acquired a lot of knowledge from the Shastram, that can leave you also, right? And the famous example is about Radhakrishnan, Dr. Radhakrishnan, right? He was president and he was a well-known scholar in the Vedic literature. At the end of his life, he couldn't even remember his name. That's how he left this world. With so much knowledge he had, he had written so many books, his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada was using in the beginning when he went to America first time. It was Radhakrishnan's Bhagavad Gita, he was reading it from that. And that's all you can read in the conversations when you spoke about it, right? And such a great personality, he could not remember his own name when he was before death. He has forgotten his name because of the influence of dementia, right? So, if he couldn't remember his name, imagine what all he has studied and written books, how much he could remember. That's all gone with that, right? So, that's what I'm saying, that even things what we have got from the books, by studying the books, and understood from the books, you can't depend on them either. Even that's not dependable, right? So, therefore, knowledge what has been acquired from the books also, you cannot give much of an importance to it. Because this is the nature of that. Old age comes and everything changes, right? So therefore, something if you want to hold on to, you have to have such a thing which will never leave you under any circumstances. Yeah? And if you are able to make a contact with that, vastu has to be siddha vastu. You must have already got it. Not something new. You must have already got it, right? And it should be available when you need it. And that is the only thing you can depend on. Nothing else. And that's why it's called Ashrayasthanam, right? So, you can see in the Bhagavatam, when they were talking about 12th canto, they addressed that as the Ashrayaskandam, isn't it? Atrasargo visargascha sthanam poshanam utaya manandaram ishani katha nirodho mukti ashrayam. So after ashrayam, this is why ashrayam, we have to know why ashrayam. Why it is so important to take shelter of the soul, andaryami, right? So, 10th canto is nirodham, chitta vritti nirodham, it said. 11th canto is mukti, liberation, mukti skandam, or sometimes they call it as jnana skandam. So, after liberation, mukti, it is after that comes ashrayam, after mukti, right? Mukti means self-realization, right? Or knowledge of the self. Vaikuntham, Kailasam and all is not considered mukti, right? And that is because after death also, we want to go on a journey. The desire is there to go to see other places where we haven't gone, we haven't seen. Like in this world also, we like to go and see places where we never been. That tendency is there. And so therefore we are saying that we want to go to Vaikuntham, we want to go to Kailasam, see what's going on there in Kailasam, or what's going on in Vaikuntham, or anywhere else for that matter, right? And nowhere in the Bhagavatam you will see going back to Vaikuntham spoken anywhere, right? Bhagavatam defined it very precisely, muktihi tanyatha rupam swarupena vyavasthiti. That is the fundamental definition, and Sri Shukha Brahmarshi has confirmed that when he spoke about liberation, right? So, what does that mean? It means that I leave everything what I am not, and to remain in my spiritual identity, actually what I am. I am not this body. Body is not my identity. Body goes away, and instead of accepting another body, getting back my real spiritual nature, spiritual identity, and to remain in that state, right? Surubhasthiti it is called. And that realization and self-realization and being established in that state, and that is what is called mukti. Bhagavatam calls it like that. Mukti hit anyatha rupam. Hitva, anyatha rupam hitva, swarupena vyavasthiti. That is the fundamental definition, right? So, after mukti, ashrayam can happen. And so, what you have experienced in mukti, in liberation state, that is what we refers to as that experience is Bhagavan, Brahmam, Bhagavan, all other words, right? Yeah. So we call that Bhagavan when you are in the platform of the body. When you are in the platform of the body, Sharira Mandalam, that is when you are referring to that state in the mukti as Bhagavan, Because you are identifying with the body, in the bodily level, when you are referring to that state, is called as Bhagavan. Right? So that vastu, Bhagavan whom you refer to, if you have to take his shelter or ashrayam for that, where is Bhagavan? You have to know that first. Is it not? To take shelter of, you have to know where he is, right? And that means you have to know his surupam, and you also have to know there is no sadhana process whereby you can take the shelter, ashrayam, right? And because all other things, what you can use it for sadhana, will leave you one day, like the mind, like the intelligence, everything else, right? So, first thing to know is that ashrayam, or taking shelter, right? There is nothing in this world which you can take shelter of. That's the first thing to get convinced on that. There is nothing in this world I can take shelter of, because they will all leave me one day. Whether it is money, whether it is this body, whether it's a mind, whether it's a family, whether it's a society, whether it's this world, whatever it is, anything you take in this world, they will all leave you one day. So therefore, it's not worthwhile taking shelter of any of them. That conviction first. Right? You can see sometimes that very, very wealthy people, they suffer in this world, is it not? They also go through suffering, right? They may have a lot of wealth, but then they may experience problems in life. You see, some problems in life comes to them, and then they don't know what the solution is. Problem. Health problems, it could come to them. Even for wealthy people. There's so many interesting cases, if you look at the wealthy people's way of life, how they, with the wealth, they can do so many things, but ultimately, they don't feel safe still. Shelter is not there in any of them. And so many cases, big, very, very rich people, right? So you may have a lot of wealth, but you could get into some problem which cannot be solved with wealth. There are situations like that in life, right? Sometimes certain diseases, when it comes, you may have a lot of money, but there is no cure. What do you do? What's the point of having a lot of wealth when your body is dying out in that way, right? So certain diseases, when it comes, right, you know that it's not going to be cured, you're going to die and leave the body. If you don't accept all these things, the life will teach us one day that this is the way it is. Life will teach us in its own way, right? So that is the duty of material nature. Prakriti does that. Prakriti teaches this lesson, right? Because if you are not willing to learn in the proper way about life, it's the duty of the Prakriti to teach us that what she wants to tell us, right? So at that time we will realize that we are totally helpless on these issues, right? So then only you come to conclusion that there is nothing I can take shelter in this world, I can't hold on to anybody or anyone in this world. And when you come to that conclusion, then you become confused. What do I do now? And by the time is over, the life is coming to an end, right? In this way, for this reason only, if such a situation should not develop in life, happen in life, therefore, if you take shelter of Salsangam for this purpose, right, and get to know that there is a vastu available for ashrayam to take shelter, there is something available for taking shelter, and able to take that shelter, that's the idea behind it. To get to know that there is something possible to take shelter, and that means in order to do that, those things, what you should not take shelter, you should leave them first. Before taking shelter of something, once you realize that those things which I am taking shelter now is not going to give me shelter, any moment they can leave me and go. If you understand that, I give you a good example for that. You know, India's wealthiest person is Ambani, isn't it? Ambani. In Bombay, he built one of the massive houses what he owns, 28 floors or something like that. It has got such a tight security and so much billions of dollars he has invested into that. Apparently it is so. He's got all kinds of facilities, right? But they are living under fear. What's the fear? Fear is this, that when the situation in Pakistan changed and this new government, what is there, that Munir, who is in charge, he said the first thing what we are going to hit when the war starts, this will be that his house, he said. This was his statement. The first thing in Bombay, Ambani's residence is the one we are going to hit first when a war happens with India first. So what do you do? With all so much of billions of dollars invested into that property, thinking that such a tight security and people go there to want to have a look at that house, so much wealth pumped into it, but they also live under fear. Imagine that. This is life in this world. Such wealthy people, they live in fear. So what to talk about ordinary people? So this is the point Krishna is making here, that so you have to know whom you are taking shelter, first of all. If you take shelter of your home, taking shelter of your family, taking shelter of your body, shelter of doctors, that of medicines and all that, thinking that they will save you from the disaster, it is not going to happen. Therefore, we have to, where to take shelter, one has to know first. Where to take shelter, right? So in order to take shelter of the right thing, you have to give up the taking shelter of those ones whom we have taken shelter falsely. Falsely took shelter of so many things, right? So in order to do that, it is like this. You know this... savories, if you want to eat that, you need strong teeth. Chakli, what do they call it, isn't it? The round ones. With the rice they make it. And if you have to bite it, and to bite it you need the teeth. So before the time comes when you lose all your teeth, before that you should eat it and fulfill your desire. After the teeth is gone, if somebody gives it to you, you can't eat that anymore. Because it is not, you can't eat it, what can you do? So that means, if you are able to give up your attachment to it before that thing happens, otherwise that desire will come back again to eat that, right? And once the teeth is gone, you can't do it. So similarly, ashrayam is like that. You have to give up taking shelter of those things falsely whom you have taken shelter. Once you have to give up that shelter there, right? Ashrayam is only possible with nitya vastu. Nitya vastu means what is permanent here, right? We have to learn this process of taking shelter of nitya vastu, permanent thing, and you have to also learn the process of taking shelter of anitya vastu. To give up the taking shelter of anitya vastu, the two things side by side has to happen. Nitya vastu means permanent thing you should take shelter. Temporary thing, you should not take shelter, right? So, then there is no problem. Anitya vastu means temporary things, you can use them in the world. But nitya vastu, you have to take shelter. What we are doing is, anitya vastu, we are taking shelter, and nitya vastu, we are using it. Vyavaharam, doing business with nitya vastu, and taking shelter of Anitya Vastu. These are all Upanishads. Upanishads are saying this, right? Anitya Vastu for Vyavahara. Nitya Vastu for shelter. What we are doing is, Anitya Vastu we do take shelter, Nitya Vastu we do Vyavaharam with it. This is a big problem. That's the way we are. People are like that. You can't do anything about it. That's just the way we are. We have not learned that principle. Principle is like this. Anitya Vastu is for Vyavaharam. Nitya Vastu for Ashrayam. Ashrayam means taking shelter. Instead, what do? We take shelter of Anitya Vastu and we do Vyavaharam with Nitya Vastu. Nitya Vastu is for Ashrayam. But we do Vyavaharam with Nitya Vastu. Right. So if you have to take shelter of Nitya Vastu, then you have to know what this Nitya Vastu is. Right? And where do you find that? And that is what it's saying here. Vedam says so, that you have to find that Nitya Vastu within yourself. Right? Science is inquiring that Nitya Vastu in the world outside. Actual inquiry should be inside. Nitya Vastu is inside, right? So, like you can see, the science does their God particle. That means outside you are inquiring the Vastu for. And you won't be able to find that Nitya Vastu outside in the world, right? So what science is doing today, rishis have done all this long, long, long ago. What science is doing today, the rishis have done all these experiments long ago, right? And then they have found out that this, you see, lot of these things, what the modern science is bringing forward in front of us, all these magic, what they are presenting, like for example, when the mobile phone comes, and now we have this communication so made so easy with mobile phones and all that. And every time we are getting affected by that, thinking that, oh, science has got an answer for everything, right? So, similar things are spoken in the Puranam also. In many Puranams you will find a lot of things spoken like this. And they are not just stories written in a fancy way, right? So, for example, changing the male to female body and the female to male body. It's all there in Mahabharatam also, cloning businesses, right? And one piece of flesh was cut into pieces, put into many pots, 100 pots, and then chanted mantram and turned all that into life. Life came out from that. That's where all the Kauravas were born, in that way, right? So this kind of magic, what science is offering us, has been done and tried before also in the past, right? And similarly, weapons-wise, destroying weapons which can destroy the whole world. Such weapons were found out even before. During the war, they were able to, they had the possession of such weapons, right? So, so when these things were happening, right, sometimes you may find it difficult to believe certain things when you read the Puranams. Oh, such things existed in the past, right? But you have to understand that rishis have also tried all these things, what we are thinking so valuable about the modern science and modern inventions, right? So, rishis said all these things. Ultimately, after all their research, the rishis have come to this one conclusion that All this is asata, because none of them ultimately solves the problem. Problem, what is the problem? Problem is we want the shanti inside. We want to know what we are, how can we stay permanent, not temporarily, right? So therefore, what they are saying to us is, all this knowledge what you are finding it out through your research and experiments and things like that is not considered to be knowledge. It is considered to be ignorance. They put a stamp on that as avidya. Everything what you have done research work and through that what you have found out is all avidya. They have totally rejected everything in that way, right? And they also said that this research and researched knowledge, what you have come up with, right? And only will create at the end, it will only destruction. It will not get you anywhere. And they have come to this conclusion long ago, and therefore they decided that's not the way we should go. They have come to that conclusion long ago, right? So therefore, what we are saying here is that research and knowledge that comes, that knowledge, Rishi's answer to that is, this is very important, if you understand what they are saying. You do research and you get knowledge. More important than that is ashrayam, taking shelter. It's a very difficult thing to come to terms with for modern world. Modern world believes in research, experiments and finding the knowledge, developing the knowledge, and that way they think that one day we will become free from death and we will become eternal and all problems will be solved. That's the idea behind modern science, is it not? Science is going in that direction. Rishis are saying to us, don't go down in that route. That is not the way to go. Ashrayam is the method, process. Ashrayam means taking shelter. So you can see that more important than knowing things and research and getting results from that, more important than that is ashrayam. Ashrayam is more important, right? And so they begin with, everything they begin with the body first, this body itself, right? So I don't know who I am. I don't even know who I am. I know that this body will go one day. Then what happens to me? Without all this knowledge, and how am I going to escape from this? What am I going to do about it? Right? So I have to know who I am first, and what do I need? And it is no point knowing that that this body, knowing that it is temporary, that's not good enough. Knowing that this body is temporary and the body will go. And then what happens? I don't know. What happens? I don't know. So all this kind of knowledge, what Krishna is saying here, is that it is a total waste of time. In this 13th chapter, it's a direct challenge to the science, modern science, asking the modern science and leave it to us to decide who is on the right path. Is the science on the right path or Shastram is on the right path? That is the answer in the 13th chapter. That is why this chapter is so important. It's a direct challenge to the modern science. Science is saying to us, they will solve our problems. Rishis are saying to us, don't go down into that route. It will not get you anywhere at the end. You will go on doing this research forever. You will not get to any conclusion at the end. Yeah? Answer is, they have got the answer. They are saying, the answer is ashrayam, taking shelter. Why Bhagavatam kept ashrayam as the last one? Because that is the end of everything. That finishes. With that everything is over. Right? So, suppose you do research work and you get to know a lot of things about this world, about other planets, about the sun, about the moon, and then what? What happens after that? What's your position then? You are still going through the different bodies again and again. So what benefit did you get from that? By getting to know about the sun and the moon and the planets and the stars and oceans and mountains and hills and Himalayas and Everest and everything. Well, how is it going to help me? I have to go through this change again in the body. I will get old, I'll get sick, I'll die, I'll get another body. If that's not going to change, that will remain as it is. Yeah. So therefore, ashrayam is more, if you analyze both properly, knowledge and ashrayam both, taking shelter and knowledge. If you compare that both, and then you have to decide what is ultimately beneficial for me. What actually solves the problem? Ashrayam solves the problem, not knowledge. Knowledge doesn't solve the problem, right? So, so If you have to know these things, you study all the sutras. Brahma Sutram you study, Vedanta Sutram, Vedavyasa Maharshi mentions this in his own way. Patanjali's Yoga Sutram you study, the same thing he has spoken. Jaimini's Karma Sutram you study, the same thing he has spoken. So rishis, you can see the way they think. Their way of thinking is so different from us. They never put their faith, false faith, in all these falsities of the so-called research business and getting results from that, right? So that's what he says, sarvam dukkham vivekinam. Patanjali says in the Yoga Sutram about this, right? So, suppose your house caught fire, right? What will you do first thing? You'll run for water, is it not? To extinguish the fire, right? Or will you think, oh, I have to save my TV first? You won't be running after to take the TV out first from the house, is it not? You'll look for water first. In the same way that, or you will look for how you can escape from the fire first thing. If the house caught on fire suddenly, what will you think about first? First you escape yourself so that you don't get burned in the fire, right? It's the same situation, right? All these things are going on around us, research, experiments and science and all sorts of knowledge is around us and promising us all kinds of success in life, happiness in life and future and all that. But it's all like this burning house, you're right inside that, not knowing what to do about it, right? So, the thing is that one who has got good intelligence, he will think in this direction. That where can I take shelter? Where should I take shelter, right? So, and this example given, house getting catching fire, is very much similar to looking at our own body. For example, you can see the body, how it is changing day by day. It's getting more and more problems, one after the other, right? The skin is changing, hair has changed its color, teeth is falling off, right? And different types of illnesses are coming. If it is one illness, you can do something. But four or five diseases have come. What do you do then after that? Then you realize that there is not much hope. Can't do anything about it. It is on its way out, right? So, and similarly, when you look around, all your close friends and relations, they are all leaving the world. One after the other, they are going away, right? And similarly, all the knowledge what you have acquired from the college and university and all that, it's not valid anymore. Because that's all become useless now. So many other things have come as knowledge now in the world today. So whatever you have studied, and you can't remember also most of it, what you studied in the school or college, and that has also become useless. It's not valuable anymore, right? And similarly, your position in this world, that is also very shaky. You may have had one position in the company when you worked, but afterwards, when you left the company, you're like anybody else. Whatever position you had, that has also become meaningless, right? So, that is what this example is. When you say that there is a fire happening, and in that fire everything is getting destroyed around you, right? So when you start seeing that life in this way, kamam, and desires not gone, anger not gone, and similarly hate not gone, pride not gone, they are all still there. But all the other things are teaching us a lesson that none of them is going to be with us forever, right? So, if when you experience all these things, then naturally the next thing, next thought will be, how do I get out of this? Once you know that there is a blazing fire of material existence, as it's called, and that is this blazing fire. Everything around you is temporary, body is temporary, problems are coming, no solution to any of them. And when you accept that, how do I get out of this situation? And that is what he is saying here. One who has got that intelligence, and Vedavyasa Maharshi says that, in the Adhyatma Ramayanam, he talks about that. And a snake is standing there with its mouth open. And a frog has jumped into that mouth. The snake has got the mouth, right? And the frog has got in its mouth another living being, you know, like some kind of fly or something. So the snake is there, and the snake's mouth, a frog has got inside. The snake has caught the frog. And the frog has got another living being, some kind of fly or something, in its mouth. And the frog is thinking, I'm going to enjoy this food what I got. But he is already in the mouth of the snake. In the Adhyalpa Ramayanam, it will say like that, Chakshushravana Galastamam Darduram. That's the word they have used. Chakshushravana Galastamam Darduram. And that Darduram, Darduram means this frog, is asking for food more to enjoy. He is already being swallowed by the snake. Right? So, and this frog is extending its tongue to get hold of some insect, what comes on that way, fly, so that it can eat that. Right? The frog may get the insect, but the frog with the insect will be eaten by the snake. Similarly, you may be anything in this world. You may have wealth, you may have health, you may have nice facilities, family, everything, position, whatever it may be, till we recognize that this is all false. They are not real, right? All your name, fame, everything, right? And it is all ultimately going to leave you one day and go, till you come to that realization, and whatever position you may have in this world, then you start thinking about ashrayam. Otherwise, you won't think about ashrayam. Buddha says this. Buddha talks about that, right? Buddha was a son of a emperor, isn't it? He was a very rich person, coming from a royal family. But he mentioned this, that he says that whether you are a son of an emperor, whether you are a son of a beggar, this problem don't go away. Everybody has this problem, right? Whether you are a Brahmana or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra, it doesn't matter. You have to face the music one day, right? So, whether you are an Indian or you are an American, you still have the same problem in front of us, right? So, this situation is called samsaram, material existence. Material existence means like this. Always living in fear and fully conscious that what you are existing here, in whatever position you are living in this world, it's not permanent. It will leave one day, one way or the other. It's not a safe and secure at all. Right? So, to come out of this situation, right, to know the seriousness behind that, how serious that is, why we don't want to get out of this situation, because we are not become serious about it. We are not fully conscious of the situation where we are now, right? So, when you become very serious of the situation, right, only then you will become, only when you become serious of the situation, only when this will all make sense. So if you don't become serious about the our existence now, where we are now, if you are not become serious about it, not conscious of the reality here, then it is very difficult for us to become serious about spiritual life. Serious about spiritual life, right? So, say for example, one who has become serious, he has become very sick, right? And when you give him the medicine, somebody who is very sick, and you are giving him medicine, and he says, I don't want the medicine. That is our present situation. It's like that, right? So, more than that, right, accept this knowledge, what Krishna has spoken here. There is no other solution to this problem. If you can say another solution to the problem, well and good. But there is no other solution, right? So, in order to do this, Vedantam knowledge, what Krishna is going to talk about from now, from the next few chapters, right? The only tool for that, one has to start thinking about it properly. Analyzing what Krishna is going to say from now on, right? You turning your attention, first of all, to the body itself. That is how you begin this process. All what we have with our control at the moment, control in the sense that Krishna has given us a tool to study, and that is this body. It begins with the body. Body is where you start spiritual life with, is with the body, right? So this chapter begins with the body. 13th chapter begins with the body, right? This body itself is what we call as shariram. Krishna is saying there, isn't it? Idam shariram kaudeya kshetram ityabhidiyade. He says there. You see that? The words you have to very carefully notice when Krishna uses these words, right? Idam shariram kaudeya kshetram ityabhidiyade. He says, right? Because this body, right? This body is an amazing phenomenon. Nobody understand it properly. Nobody understand it. You may be thinking doctors understand it. They don't understand it. They know how to treat some diseases in the body when it comes. But do they understand? Does the science understand this body? No. Nobody understands the body. It's all foolishness to believe that they all understand the body. With all these big, big facilities they have built up, and give us a false impression that you understand this body. Nobody understands this body. They may have developed certain medicines and certain machines to find what's wrong with the body, and they can fix certain things, but they also know very well that they don't have the answer for all the problems with this body, right? So, therefore, because it is difficult to know this body, and suppose when somebody die, the dead body, you take it, cut them into pieces, and you give different parts for the name of the body, hands, legs, head, and feet, and in this way, right? By not that, doing like that, you won't get to know this body, is it not? You won't get to know the body in that way, right? So, you are studying the body when there is life present inside the body. That is when you study the body. The moment the life leaves this body, whatever experiment you do with that body, research with that body, is not going to give you any answer properly. To understand the body, you have to study the body when there is life inside the body. Right? So, therefore, Krishna is saying there that body becomes body, shariram, is only when the life is present inside that. Once the life leaves this body is not different than anything else in this world. It's not different than anything else in this world, right? So, therefore, it is called, the word in Sanskritam, they call it as kunapam. It's a bag, jadam it is, dead matter, right? There is no name like shariram. Shariram, it is called only shariram when there is life inside the body. When there is no life, it is not shariram. It is called a kunapam. You will see that esyatma buddhi kunapetri dhatuge sodhi kalatradishu bhauma ijyati. In the Bhagavatam, they will use that word, kunapam. Right? Or it is jadam, dead matter. Right? It doesn't call, it is not called a shariram anymore. So, that is the reason that with a dead body, whatever experiments you are doing with it, research or dead body experiment. Okay, they do that in the medical colleges and all that. They cut the body into pieces. After the dead body, they use it for their, to teach others about the anatomy and all that of the body, right? But you cannot do a proper research work with that body once it is dead. Because nothing will react. You cannot trust it with that body what happens. Only when the life principle is inside, You can study the body, what happens when you eat, how it goes through, how you are breathing, all these things. You can study only when the life principle is inside. But once the life principle has left the body, then any research what you do with that body won't give you any definite answers. It cannot give it, because there is no life in the body, right? So that means that results what you get from that is not perfect. Perfection is not there, because there is no Chaitanyam in the body. It is Jadam, right? So the person who was living in that body, who left the body, what he has left behind is that body what you are doing research with. The person who lived in that body, when he left that body, what he left behind is the body what you are doing research with. Isn't it? Right. So when you say, Krishna is saying this, idam shariram kaundeya, he is saying, we are concerned about shariram when life is present inside, not after the death. That we are not interested in that. Because that is prakriti, that is given to prakriti, he is saying here. So here, shariram, when he is saying it, so you see the difference here, that shastram, I'm talking about Vedic knowledge, rishis, they begin their knowledge from the soul towards the body. Modern science begins from body towards the soul. Have you seen the difference? Rishis are saying to us, you should study the body, first you start from the soul. Soul is the starting point, not the body. Whereas science is doing all the research, starting from the body and trying to find out where is the soul. Totally opposite way. The Rishi's method is from the soul you begin everything. Everything begins with the soul. Body is one thing, as Krishna said, Sharira Yatra. So much different types of bodies, 8.4 million different types of bodies are there. Krishna is saying, why you give importance to that? See that one thing that is present in all the bodies, which is keeping it going. We don't go in that direction. So there itself, we have parted the way. Science gone one way, rishis went in the another direction. Right? So spiritual life means, from the body going inwards is spiritual life. Spiritual life is from body going inwards. Right? Whereas for the science, from body, from going outward. From inside, going outwards. Right? My body and the world makes the, my body and the world is the science. Science is centered around that. Right? So, my body, myself, and the inner world is a spiritual life. Yeah? So, both begins from the body, but one goes inwards, other one goes outward. Other one goes outwards. So, and when you go outwards from the body, then you get stuck in the influence of time. You know, in how many places in the Bhagavatam this is spoken? At least 3 or 4 places in the Bhagavatam the same thing. Andarbahi purusha kala rupaihi. Prayachado mrityumradamradam cha maya manushyasa vadasya vidvan. Parikshit Maharaj said this. Inside, amradam, nectar, eternal thing. Outside, influence of time, death. If we understand that, what Parikshit said there, then you can understand science and the shastra. Difference between science and the rishis. Parikshit is saying that andarbahi purusha kala rupai. Inside you are eternal. Andarbahi, andar is inside. Inside is your eternal. That is actually you. But bahis, outside, purusha kala rupai, in the form of time. Means time will destroy everything outside. Everything outside will be destroyed one day. Why you waste your time studying that? That's what they are indicating to us. Why are you wasting your time studying something which will be destroyed by the influence of time? With that question, 10th canto begins. Parikshit asked that question, right? And it comes again in the Bhagavad Gita in other places. The same thing. Andarbahi purushakala rupai. Right? So, viryanitasyakila lokabhajam andarbahi purushakala rupai prayachado murtyum radamradam cha maya manushyasya vadasya vidvan. This is Parishit Maharaj asking this question to Shukha Brahmarshi. Anyway, that's Bhagavadam says, right? So, what he's saying is that when you look at it from the body, if you look outside in the world, what you find is Yamadharma Raja in the form of time coming, destroying everything one after the other, right? When you look inwards from the body, inwards, Amrutam, Krishna, Andaryami inside, eternal, permanent. That's where it goes, right? So, so we will stop there today. We'll continue next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Dinadiya Prabhupada ji, Srila Prabhupada ji.